WRIF's award-winning Night Call, Detroit's longest-running phone-in talk show with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan. Peter and Jolene will be voicing their opinions, and they want to hear yours. Call them at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter and Jolene.
All right, thank you very much. Hi, Jolene.
Hi, Peter.
Why does that music always make me laugh?
Maybe because it's new.
New?
To the show.
Yeah.
It's not new.
It's not like the Grammys.
It's not Grammy new.
Yeah, boy, the Grammys were something.
They were amazing.
Green Day, what was it, 21 Guns?
Yeah, I loved that.
And they're going to have a musical based on their American Idiot.
Broadway musical based on their American Idiot.
American Idiot, so it was about George Bush.
I know. And the whole thing is quite political, actually.
I mean, it's like George Bush is like, I don't know, Jimmy Carter or...
Like so yesterday?
Yeah, or Gerald Ford. People have just forgotten. Why don't you take the phones off the
whole... But you know why he's still here today? Because I blame him for the state of everything right now.
Well, yeah.
Uh-huh.
You know, they say, hey, you've been in here a year, Obama. You got to stop blaming Bush. I was just reading an article.
Are you kidding me? He's got a lot.
Franklin Delano Roosevelt, in the 1936 election, he was elected in 1932, and he was handed this massive depression because of Republican policies through the 1920s and the inability of Herbert Hoover from 1929 to 1932 to deal with the depression, that he correctly was still blaming those policies on the Republicans, and that... You couldn't fix everything overnight. Sure didn't, either.
Well, yeah.
Well, 313-298-WRIF is our phone number.
313-298-9743.
We got some email address for, actually just one. One email address. Call, talk, yes. Call, talk, yes, at yahoo.com. And there's open lines for you right now, so you can speak your mind on the air. Or if you're a little bashful, or later when the lines are just jammed because everyone's trying to get in to make their opinion heard, you can use that and email us something. Well, this has not, we've been having some problems with the podcast. Last week I read this note from Scott, who listens in Stockholm, Sweden, and so I sent out an email to my email list. And actually, if you'd like to be on my email list, you could just email me at calltalkyes@yahoo.com. So I sent out something saying, look, I think we changed servers, or I don't know, I couldn't tell what the hell was going on with this stuff. But anyway, so I said, now I've got a new URL, the new address. Just click on this link, and that will take you to the podcast at WRIF.com.
It worked for me.
Well, it's a long story, but it didn't work, and finally Chris here, one of our great tech people, figured it out. So if you got an email from me recently and it said the podcast, because what I'm afraid of is that people will have to resubscribe to the podcast because people were saying it wasn't being sent to them.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, so Jade is getting your phone calls, and she also will be, she'll have the show on the air, on ready for podcast tomorrow before noon.
It's a good thing.
So that's an improvement. And also you can listen to Jade at Midnight Metal here on WRIF, and also Riff 2.
She's on there.
She's on there. So let's see. Speaking of email, speaking of calltalkyes@yahoo.com, you know, there are people that send me 8 and 10 emails a day. And I noticed that they send them out to every liberal and progressive and left talk show host in America. And here's the
bit. So they mean well.
Yeah, well, and this is what I sent to somebody. I said, let me speak frankly to you as a measure of the appreciation I have for listeners who are engaged in trying to make sense of the world in which we live. All of the public personalities you have written to, including me, have access to the same information that you've sent. So these are all repeats of what we've already read. All of us are swamped with emails, and no one, I repeat, no one reads forwards like yours. This must have been kind of heartbreaking to the guy. I mean,
so harsh, Peter.
Well, I said, I speak frankly as a measure of my appreciation.
Okay.
I share your indignation about events, but this probably isn't the most valuable way to spend your time, and it isn't for us, you know, the talk show hosts. And this is, but thank you for thinking enough of my program to include me in a prestigious list. So, but figure this, people, that I go to some of the same news sites you do, and don't send me all the same forwards that you sent to your entire list. In fact, I have to tell you,
we pretty much have that kind of thing covered.
Yeah, I suspect that some of, maybe what you should do is write to people and say, you know, I've been sending you a lot of email forwards about articles that I think are really illustrative of what's going on in this country, and would you like to continue on my list? I sadly say, I think you'd probably be shocked to say that you'll probably get a small response, because sending out endless forwards to people probably doesn't make it, you know, and people, they can go to their own website, their own news sites, mm-hmm. their own news sites, and get all this stuff, but maybe I'm wrong. So what are we looking at here, Jalene? We got kind of Crime Corner to start?
I think it's more than crime. I think it's the psychotic corner.
Yeah, right.
You know, and I watched part of this coverage of, is it Scott Roeder?
Roeder.
Roeder, yeah. He was the man who was convicted this week of shooting and killing George Tiller.
Right.
And that was in Wichita, Kansas, who provided abortion.
He was an abortion provider. But let's use a stronger word. He assassinated this man carrying out a legal, federally approved medical procedure that the Supreme Court years ago held that was something between a doctor and the woman. Wasn't a matter of a state interventive? Can you say that? Interventionist? That's better. Interventionist policy? That was overturned. And it certainly wasn't any business of this man who decided to take a life on, you know, he accuses this Dr. Tiller of taking lives, of killing babies. Well, everybody's welcome to their opinion, but when you start killing to enforce your opinion, because
killing to defend, to go up against what you consider killing.
Yeah. I mean,
really makes no sense.
Does he really think that the women that had abortions thought they were killing their babies? I mean, mothers don't kill their babies. Sometimes you have this after-abortion remorse. Very frequently, it's organized by these compulsory pregnancy people.
Yeah.
Right? And they fall into that either through usually through religious stuff. And they say, I never should have done that. And, well, I mean, okay, I guess if you think you made a mistake, you made a mistake. But certainly at the time, nobody thought that they were, killing their kid. And the idea at first, the Scott Roeder was going to essentially put forth what's called a necessity defense, that he had to kill him.
Yeah.
Because in order to save babies, and you know how long the jury was out before they came back with first-degree murder conviction? 37 minutes.
That's it. Yeah. They were ready to.
Yeah, which I was worried. I'm thinking Kansas, here in,
okay.
here in the East. Are we in the East? In Detroit, I feel like we are. But we think, wow, those people in Kansas. But, that gets into everything's permissible. I had to shoot him. He spilled my Pepsi.
Right. Right.
So, yeah. But, hey, we've got, we've got more on Crime Corner. Okay, a couple of items. Pass me a Kleenex, will you?
Peter, gross.
I just had to.
Gross.
Well, here's a couple of items. The federal government says a man accused of keeping an arsenal in a New Jersey motel room had a map of the U.S. Army's Fort Drum base in upstate New York. The U.S. Attorney's Office in Newark on Tuesday charged 43-year-old Lloyd Woodson of Reston, Virginia, with a weapons offense. And let's see, a call from a convenience store clerk about a suspicious person led to an arrest and a frightening discovery. The man was wearing a bulletproof vest and carrying a loaded assault rifle and four magazines of ammunition. Back in the man's motel room, the authorities found a grenade launcher, more rifles, a night vision scope, and ominously, maps of the military facility. Yeah, that. When I see a guy with a bulletproof vest.
A grenade launcher?
Yeah, that I call him suspicious. Second story, what's up with these grenade launchers?
Collecting. There's collecting and there's collecting.
Yeah.
Right?
Well, I knew a guy that had hundreds of guns.
Well, we know someone who listens to the show.
Oh, yeah. But this guy had hundreds of guns and no ammunition at all.
Really?
Zero. Well, he was a collector.
So he really was just collecting.
Yeah,
good.
Yeah. Never. Yeah, did you ever shoot him? He said, no.
Ever?
Whatever.
Wow.
And he passed me a Thompson submachine gun.
Passed you? As like gave it to you? Or
yeah.
Just...
Let me hold it.
And was it? How did it feel, Peter? Did you need a Kleenex?
I want My nose was not dripping. But I just kept thinking of, most people talk about the St. Valentine's Day massacre. There was one here in Detroit called the Collingwood Massacre. Huh? There's a street in Detroit called Collingwood, and there was a gang. You're not from Detroit, so you don't know all this Purple Gang history.
Told this story.
Have I? Okay, all right.
But you can tell it again.
There's not a lot of women that will tell you, hey, man, I've heard this one before. So my wife who does, how can you illustrate, puts her hands up like 5, 10, 15.
You told me this 50 times, Peter.
Yeah, right. But here's the second. So an ex-military man with ties to the Tea Party and militia movements has been charged in separate complaints with raping a minor and with possessing an unregistered grenade launcher.
Ugh.
I mean, you can register a grenade launcher? I don't think so. I think you have to register him, but if you do, you're in trouble. He's a former U.S. Marine, Charles Dyer. He served in Iraq. Arrested January 12th in Oklahoma on the rape charge, but then they went to his house and they found several firearms and a Colt M203 40-millimeter grenade launcher. When they searched a national crime database, the deputies found that the grenade launcher was one of three stolen from a military base in Fort Irwin, California. In 2006, he said he'd received the grenade launcher from his best friend who gave it to him while he was stationed in California with the Marine Corps. Hey, here, man, hold this for me, will you? I'm going to maybe need it later.
Jeez.
I mean, these people are walking among us, folks. It's not clear what Dyer might want with a grenade launcher. Well, I don't know. He might want to launch some grenades, But he has declared himself a proud member. I don't want to give any right-wing group any publicity. So I'm going to not even mention it. He has declared himself a proud member of an organization that aims to enlist ex-military and law enforcement personnel and has stoked fears that the federal government may try to seize Americans' guns and round people up into concentration camps.
Oh, my gosh. Okay, in the psychotic pile once again.
Yeah. I mean, where did they get that idea? And you know who they might try to round up and put into concentration camps? People with grenade launchers.
Maybe.
So what's the message here? Follow the law. Don't have a grenade launcher, and then you'd be okay. All right? But let me see.
Good advice.
An organization that aims to enlist ex-military and law enforcement personnel. This is like...
The Michigan Militia?
Well, this is like, I think it's worse than that. I think it's like the Fry Corps. With the Fry Corps were these ex-military Wehrmacht guys after World War I who eventually morphed into the Nazis.
Oh,
so when you start having, you know, armed ex-military law enforcement people organizing outside of their official capacities and start having this nutso view of the government. I mean, there's a lot of things to criticize the government. We may get on with that as well.
Oh, well, we can do that all night, right?
Yeah. You know, I have, I would, when you see these figures for Barack Obama and his presidency, I guess I am definitely moving into the opponent column. Without a doubt. I mean, it gets worse every single day.
Well, there's some things that he's even worse than Bush on.
Yeah, he apparently,
seemingly.
Not apparently, but he is spending more on nuclear weapons than George Bush.
Yeah.
President Obama's planning, this is from the Daily Mail in London. President Obama's planning to increase spending on America's nuclear weapons stockpile just days after pledging to try to rid the world of them, which he did in his State of the Union speech. And in fairness, it was partly that he said that they wanted to safeguard him. But I wonder whether there's any real commitment beyond rhetoric as to actually abolishing them. I mean, there's tens of thousands of nuclear weapons, some of them on first strike alert that we have and Russia has. This is not good. And also, in the area of nukes, I mean, we say no nukes, period. And people have been saying that for 30 years. But now, the Obama administration may soon guarantee as much as $18.5 billion in loans to build nuclear reactors to generate electricity. And Congress is considering whether to add billions more to support an expansion of nuclear power. This is
going in the exact opposite direction of where it needs to be going. And my friend Vlad, who used to inspect those Fermi and a lot of the nuclear power plants.
Yeah.
Oh, boy.
You know, we had this identical conversation last week.
I know, but I'm telling you, I talked to him more about it this week, and he says he would welcome the opportunity to tell his story.
Well, I come to call it 313-298-WRIF. Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan with you. Yeah, and because I remember reading this now. Part of each nuclear plant can cost as much as $8 billion, and they haven't built any in a long time because the problems of nuclear waste and safety remain unsolved. And we actually read this identical thing
it's
last.
It's kind of like having herpes. You know, like there's no cure. Sure, there's nothing you can do about it.
Never mind. I was going to ask you a question, but I don't even want to go there.
Well, it's true.
Yeah,
there's nothing you can do about it.
Yeah. Let's see. Beyond Nuclear, which is, I think, yes, beyondnuclear.org. In a disappointing moment during his State of the Union speech that surely must have alienated many in the environmental movement that helped elect him, President Barack Obama called for the three pillars of pollution to address U.S. energy needs. In citing the need for more clean energy jobs, the president outlined three of the priorities most bitterly opposed by environmentalists: building a new generation of safe, clean nuclear power plants in this country. This is, it's like an internal contradiction. You know, there is not clean, safe nuclear power plants. Even if you could run them completely safely, you can't get rid of the waste. There's nowhere to put it. It's piling up on the shores of Lake Michigan and Lake Erie.
They don't even have like a little cream you can put on it.
No. God.
There's no magical pill.
I'm going to ask you a personal question. To keep up with this, I'm going to ask you a personal question. You know more about this than I'd like to think. All right. Let's see.
There's no truth to that.
Okay. He added that it was also necessary to pass, quote, a comprehensive energy and climate bill with incentives that will finally make clean energy the profitable kind of energy in America. Clearly, Beyond Nuclear and other environmental and anti-nuclear groups face an uphill battle to confront the enormous influence of the corporate lobbyists on the White House agenda. So, but they're saying they will keep on going. So he's all about coal, oil, and nuclear. He's owned by the coal company. All the politicians are owned by the oil companies. And now, of course, they can, now that this Supreme Court decision allowing corporations to give just as much money as they want.
And corporations not from just in this country.
Yeah, right. That's
international
right.
corporations can buy elections in the United States now.
Gotta love it. Kind of a little Haiti update. It just doesn't seem like it gets much better or barely. Boy, the coverage is so heartbreaking that I can barely watch it.
I really can't anymore. I never really could. I mean, I saw enough to grasp it.
But I'll tell you, the trailer industry is right there.
Oh, yeah.
They are,
in another very evil little way. It's those...
You gave it away.
Those leftover
FEMA trailers from Katrina.
That are seeping with formaldehyde.
Right.
They're saying, oh, we'll take those down to Haiti. So let's give them cancer-causing housing.
Yeah, now, you could say, what the hell, what's this all about? Why does the trailer industry want to give Haitians these trailers? Well, because what's happening is that bidding is underway on an online government-run auction to sell these toxic trailers in large lots at bargain basement prices, something the RV industry fears will reduce demand for new products. Well, with... very well could. Although, if someone said to you, hey, I'm going to sell you a $20,000 trailer for $100, but it might have formaldehyde, what would you say?
Good
of course, you'd say no.
I have it checked out.
Some of the bids received for the trailers so far work out to less than $500 for a trailer that would sell for about $20,000 new. So, lobbyists for the Recreational Vehicle Industry Association says they've been talking with members of Congress, the government, and disaster relief agencies to see if it could possibly send these trailers to Haiti.
These people need to be stopped.
Yeah.
Really?
The group's spokesman, Kevin Broom, says this really isn't the best time for the RV industry to have very low-priced trailers put onto the market, which, I mean, I understand that, but
Here's someone who's living in a shelter in Haiti, and she said, we have nothing, but I would rather sleep outside than be in a metal box full of chemicals.
And let's see, the horrible, evil strongman of Venezuela... Hugo Chavez has, the Venezuelan government said it will forgive any Venezuelan debts held by Haiti.
Oh.
So, in other words, Haiti does not have to pay
How
debt.
Evil of him.
He more evil. 313-298-WRIF. Let's save some. Well, actually, wait a minute. Where is this one thing here? This was such a trip.
What, the Pope?
No, we'll get to the Pope.
Maybe that's in our crazy religion pile.
Yeah. The smoking gun. Always on the alert for any teenage sexuality. Did you see this?
I did.
Yeah.
This is unreal.
They want to make sure that there's no hanky-panky.
At a school dance.
Yeah, in Racine, Wisconsin. Here's the deal.
I have relatives who live there.
This is actually what they gave out to students. When dancing back to front, what the hell does that mean?
Behind.
Yeah, yeah. No. All dancers must remain upright. No sexual bending is allowed.
Do you know what that dance is
Yeah. People have been doing that forever. The dog?
Well, this is more of a kind of, I don't know.
I know, but I mean, I'm talking.
Demonstrate it.
Right now?
No, let's not.
Let's do it.
Not be able to go on for a variety of reasons. So no touching of the breast, buttocks, or genitals. No straddling of each other's legs. Both feet must remain on the dance floor at all times. How do you do that?
I don't know. Well, you
that
can't.
That's my favorite part right there.
You can't do the Charleston, the electric slide, or the cha-cha, even.
Students will be given wristbands. The door, one warning results in a teacher cutting off the wristband and you're out of there.
Yeah, examples are no hands on knees and no hands on the dance floor with your buttocks touching your dance part. I mean, imagine giving this to 15-year-olds, how embarrassing this is. And also, the dance will be videotaped to ensure the safety of all students.
Big brothers watching you, dancers.
Yeah. No hats at prom, no blue jeans. Boys should wear collared shirts and dress pants. Girls cannot wear dresses that expose cleavage. Did you see, what's his name, Colbert?
Stephen Colbert.
Stephen Colbert's daughter? He was hosting the Grammys?
Yeah.
And then they showed her. She was about 16.
Uh-huh.
She would not get into the dance.
She would not be allowed.
Oh, my God. That was, you can't have dresses that extend above mid-thigh, have slits extending above mid-thigh. Students not appropriately dressed will not be allowed into the dance.
Now, way to suppress these.
Yeah, you could lose your dancing privileges for the year.
You know.
All right.
I don't even think I'd go.
Well, with all those restrictions,
yeah.
you wouldn't have anything to wear.
What would I do? They know that's my dance, right?
Absolutely. But dirty dancing and all this stuff. I can't. Let me see. What did they used to have? There was a dance I think it was even the name of a. I can't think of Elmore Leonard's book.
Okay.
Yeah. You know, the detective fiction writer? He's done, I don't know, off the Get Shorty.
Oh, sure.
He did all of these, yeah. Come on, folks, what's that dance that Elmore Leonard wrote about? All right, 313-298-WRIFP to Werby and Jalene Jordan with you, and we are taking your calls. A couple open lines, some people waiting. Let's take some calls right now. Here is George. George is in Detroit. Hi, George, what's happening?
Hey, Peter, how are you doing tonight?
We're good.
Yeah, no, I was just listening to your show, and it's comments on the right to bear arms and Chavez and nuclear, you know.
We threw out a lot in the last 20 minutes. You're not going to talk about abortion? What about the dance?
Yeah.
Oh, I don't give a shit about any of that. Sorry about my language.
Yeah, yeah.
No, I don't. No, these are relevant things. Those
the dance.
Are more moral issues that are discussed between, you know, family and your upbringing.
Okay, yeah. What about guns?
I own guns. I bought my first 40-millimeter grenade launcher when I was 22.
Wait a minute. You can legally have grenade launchers?
Yeah, you're allowed. You're not allowed to have certain types of ammunition.
Why do you want
a grenade launcher? Isn't that an offensive weapon?
No, I don't have the I have the 40-millimeter assault grenade launcher that comes in. It's a flashbang. You can have smoke grenades.
Huh?
You cannot have incendiary or percussion or any of them assaultive weapons.
Well, wait a minute. What do you do with a grenade launcher?
Oh, you don't do nothing with them, man. You know, I mean, like you said, I'm a collector.
Collector.
Oh, okay.
So, right. I'm definitely afraid of people. I'm definitely afraid of what is going to happen, you know.
Maybe you ought to work on that, though, George. I mean, I live in the same world you do. And you know what? Let me just put it this way. I'm prepared for most eventualities on a whole different range of levels. But, running around, walking around or existing with a high degree of fear or paranoia, it's really bad for the head.
Well, no, there is no high degree. There's just a anticipation.
You underlying.
Know what's going on.
How long have you had this anticipation?
There's many things going on with this.
How long have you had this anticipation? What are you?
I bought it as a collector, and then within the last few years, the anticipation has been growing.
Hmm. All right, well, let's leave it at that. George, thank you. I don't know. I don't know. I just don't know. I mean,
I think there's a lot of that going around.
You got to have proper tools for what either you have to do or what you anticipate having to do. That's one of my weapons, Tai Chi, which...
Works for me.
Yeah. I mean, Tai Chi is look, you know, you just see it on ads
once in a while, a little shot of vodka.
Man, I just had this. Can I say this on the air? Can I talk about a brand of vodka I had the other night?
I don't think that's a problem.
Made in Detroit. It's called Ballantine's.
Really? Really?
Oh, man, was that good?
Good old Detroit vodka?
One of these boutique, you know, which means small production and all that. Yeah, yeah. I don't know where they do, but inside the city of Detroit.
I think if we can promote any kind of made-in-Detroit or Michigan-made product, that's a pretty good thing.
Yeah, forget that stuff from Poland and Russia. Get Ballantines from Detroit City.
Yeah.
Here's Carl in Ameda. Carl, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. Go ahead, you're on the air.
Hey, yeah, I was calling about, you guys talked earlier about a guy who was arrested and he had a grenade launcher, kind of along the same subject as the last caller, but,
yeah.
You guys spoke about he had a paranoia of America being taken over and people being put in the concentration camps.
Yeah.
And, I don't really think that would ever happen. I'm not going that far, but I do know that in, some branches of the military, there have been surveys passed along to servicemen asking if it was required by law that all Americans give up their weapons, if they would, hold Americans at gunpoint and fire upon them if they resisted.
You know what, Carl? I think that's one of these urban myths. I think nothing like that ever occurred, and I think that's probably that goes down the internet with absolutely no substance to it whatsoever.
Go to Snopes.com, and you'll probably find it there. That's full of all the urban legends.
Yeah. I mean, the right-wing paranoids are they're spreading the fear that they have beyond just their little group. And if they want to, you know, go shoot off rocket launchers or grenade launchers or whatever, good. Let them do it as a hobby or as a collector like George. But when they start...
But really good. Go way, way, way out in the country.
Yeah, but when it starts leaching into the political body, when you start having it as an element in decision making about how we're going to live our lives and what we want to support and all that, it really gets poisonous. All right, thank you very much. Appreciate it. So, anybody want to try to find the? You want to go to Snopes? At Snopes.com. When you hear something, you go, wow, they're going to put us all in concentration camps. I bet if you put concentration camps into Snopes, you would probably get a lot of different...
Paranoia?
No, you'd get a lot of different items. Why don't we try it during the break? I think we just have a pretty small break, but we'll do it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Julene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Julene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Verizon Wireless is the best destination for affordable, unlimited calling. And that's good to know, because you don't have unlimited funds. Is there a money tree in your garage? Or a goose laying golden eggs? Doubtful. And while you may find the end of the rainbow, you will likely not find a pot of gold. Yes, the hard truth is, you earn your money and want to spend it wisely. That's why Verizon Wireless gives you unlimited calling, now for less, $30 less than ever before. It's only $69.99 monthly access. Yes, get unlimited talk on America's largest and most reliable wireless network to any number in the U.S., even landlines, for a new lower price. And that's good, because sadly, buried treasure is only in pirate movies. To get our best value ever on unlimited calling, go to VerizonWireless.com/new, Verizon Wireless, or call 1-800 to join in. Activation, early termination, and other fees apply. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
Tomorrow from 3 to 7, join Meltdown live at Buck Whalen Chevrolet to win a pair of tickets to see Shinedown and Puddle of Mud live at the Fillmore February 6th.
Oh, courtesy of Blackfin and Royal Oak. Enjoy happy hour 7 days a week. Half price specialty martinis, calls, house wines, draft beers, and $6 appetizers.
You'll also score passes to WRAF's Stripped Down Lounge performance February 5th.
Get all the details at WRAF.com.
Buck Whalen Chevrolet.
Jump the giant. Buck Whalen Chevrolet, 17 and a half in Van Dyke and Sterling Heights.
At 101 WRAF. Everything that rocks.
It's another new year, and your debt is higher than ever. Credit card balances that keep growing. Rising medical bills. Maybe you lost your job, or you're afraid of losing your home. That's the bad news. But you can work through your debt problems with help from Credit Card Relief. No, we're not a consolidation loan, not another one of those credit counseling deals, and not bankruptcy. We're Credit Card Relief. We've been helping people just like you for nearly a decade. If you're struggling with too much credit card debt, call us for a free consultation. We have an outstanding record of performance helping people get out of debt in months instead of years, all while saving thousands of dollars. Call Credit Card Relief right now. The consultation is free and the relief is real.
Call 866-290-8282. Not available in all states. That's Credit Card Relief. 866-290-8282. 866-290-8282. Do you see chalky water spots on your dishes and tub that drive you crazy? Those spots are a warning that your plumbing may have a serious limescale buildup. What you can't see is limescale clogging your pipes, breaking down your appliances, and blocking their heating elements. And that could be costing you $1,200 a year in energy and wear. But you can remove hard water limescale without chemicals, magnets, or salts. It's easy with HydraCare. Just visit bestofwater.com. HydraCare has been sold for years by the major utility in England as the ideal treatment to reduce and prevent limescale. You simply clip HydraCare to your main water pipe. HydraCare removes and prevents limescale buildup in your entire plumbing system. Guaranteed. If your home has hard water, extend the life of your appliances and save money with HydraCare. Just go to bestofwater.com. Lower your energy costs. Visit bestofwater.com. That's bestofwater.com.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan.
We got to fight the battle of church and state. Church and state. Church and state. We got to fight the battle of church and state. Or the walls will come a-tumbling down.
All right, Dan Barker, thank you very much from the Freedom From Religion Foundation, FFRF.org.
And keep those two things separate.
Yeah. And, wow, the late Pope John Paul flagellated himself.
Okay, when I read this...
I thought it was something else.
I did, too.
Which is sometimes known in impolite circles as the self-scrunch position. But flagellate means like whipping oneself. The late Pope John Paul flagellated himself regularly to emulate Christ's suffering. And the book, there's a book called Why a Saint, was written by Monsignor Slavomir Oder, the Vatican official in charge of the process that could lead to Roman Catholic sainthood for John Paul, includes some previously unpublished documents.
Peter, wasn't it enough that he dedicated himself to the cause?
No.
That he has to beat himself?
The book reveals that when he was not ill, he was ill a lot. He inflicted pain on himself, known in Christianity as mortification of the flesh, so as to feel closer to God. You know, I mean, couldn't you kind of do it the other way? That, I mean, some sensuous, you know...
Go sing it on a mountain.
Yeah, right. You wouldn't you do it?
A lot of ways.
In Krakow, which is in... sounds like what you could call some, you know, some city that does a lot of crack, right?
But yeah.
Krakow. Is, as in the Vatican, Carol, I can't remember how you say his Polish last name, but flagellated himself, citing testimony from people in the late Pope's close entourage while he was bishop in his native Poland after he was elected Pope in 1978. Oder writes, in his closet, among his vestments, there was hung on a clothes hanger a particular kind of belt for pants, which he used as a whip.
I know. It's just like when you're naughty and your dad goes to get the belt, but he went and got it and beat himself.
Yeah. He used to practice self-denial and asceticism by sleeping on the bare floor. Many saints of the church, including St. Francis of Assisi and St. Catherine of Siena and St. Ignatius of Loyola, practiced flagellation and asceticism as part of their spiritual life. You know, some people ask me, why aren't you a Christian? Well, there's reason 197. Although I got to say, I know a lot of Christians, and most of them, in fact, all of them, great people and involved in peace and social justice movement. None of it. Well, I don't know. Who knows? Who knows what's in their closet?
Behind closed doors.
Yeah. And did you see the Da Vinci Code or read it?
I had no interest in it.
Well, the evil monk, he is into mortification of the flesh. And he, actually, it's true. They have these belts with barbs that you tie around your leg. But what is up with it? I mean, there's, I don't know. Is there a psychiatrist in the house?
Belts are just to keep your pants off the ground.
Do you
know about this little phenomenon of pants on the ground?
What? Pants on the ground?
Do you know this? The song, Pants on the Ground?
No.
Okay. Well, it's a little pop culture American Idol reference.
I see.
A lot of people will get it out there.
But why are there so many crazy people in the world? Even in the best of circumstances, you know, life is tough.
Life is
tough. It's hard to get along with people and all that. But making it crazier with grenade launchers and whipping yourself.
And shooting abortion doctors.
Yeah. I mean, what is up with this?
I don't know.
All right, let's go back to our phone. Here's Ed in Port Huron. Ed, it's Peter and Jelena, WRIF. Thanks for joining us here on the air.
Click on that.
What?
Yeah.
Oh, sorry.
Yeah.
Sorry. Wait, right. Let's try it again, Ed. You know what? Something is amiss here. Yeah, let me see. We're going to have to desktop. There we go. All right, let's try it again. I think. No. Well. Yeah. Hey, Ed, you're on the air.
There we are.
All right. Well, back in the 1980s, I was a student at the ISD school district in here in St. Clair County. And St. Clair County Sheriff's Department had a running and shooting chase that covered 28 miles. And as we were getting out of school, we observed the suspect vehicle exchanging shots with the sheriff's deputy, and all the deputy had was his trusty 357, his Ithaca Model 37 12-gauge pump. They had fired a total of 50 rounds into his Dodge Diplomat, and he was able to get the suspects under control. They ran off the road in a Ford Bronco. They went off the road, dropped it into the ditch. They shot several times at the deputy. Suspect number one, who was the driver, was...
Wait. We were talking about...
We don't need the whole case. What's
the
point?
Talking about some 20-year-old occurrence. What's the headline on this?
The headline is that the suspect related to all three of the shootings, or I should say that was involved in that shooting, got released 9 years ago.
Uh-huh.
Went out of state and committed the crime again because he changed his name, changed his background, and they had no clue that he was involved in this shooting back in the 80s.
So what's the lesson here?
What's the lesson is that they need to do the better background checks because the guy wound up committing another robbery.
Oh, I'll agree with that.
Yeah.
You know, I hate to say it, but there are some controls I'm okay with.
Well, I'm okay. I mean, there is recidivism. That is, you know, repeat offenders.
How about the Virginia Tech shootings? I mean, that guy had spent some time locked away. And
never should have had any guns.
No.
Yeah. All right, Ed, thank you very much. Object lesson.
You know, there's people on my block that probably shouldn't even have guns, you know? I mean, no one we know.
Yeah. I was wondering. here's Richard in Farmington. Richard, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Thanks for taking my call. Next break, when you're perusing the web, Peter and Jelena, go to MediaMatters.org, and they keep on their front page a Rush Limbaugh file. I hate to bring the guy up. But, you know, he's here in Detroit on right-wing hate radio in Detroit, WJR.
Well, thanks. And, you just gave him a big free advertisement so tens of thousands of people could say, oh, I didn't know that.
Listen, who wants to listen to that guy?
I think tens of thousands of people ought to listen to what he said on his radio show last Friday, and you'll find that on the Media Matters website that I alluded to. There's a clip there where Limbaugh says the Khalid Sheikh Mohammed trial should be moved to Detroit. He said that Detroit would be a perfect spot for it because there are places in Detroit where if terrorists bombed it, no one would notice. Hmm. And also, he said that Khalid Sheikh Mohammed would be more likely to find a jury of his peers here in Detroit. Those are two hateful, outrageous, racist
statements. Well, but of course, I mean,
that's what you can expect from him.
But listen,
this is what he does, and he's trying to out. out Glenn Beck. Glenn Beck.
Yeah, so you
Glenn
got
Beck
these,
is out Rush Limbaughing him.
You got all these people that's how they earn their living, by making these outrageous statements. I don't mean to say that they aren't actually a cause for outrage, but they have this these kind of audience of angry white guys that like to hear that stuff. He gives them permission.
To hate, to
be prejudiced, to have awful opinions about people of color, of people from the Middle East, of women,
of
the gay people. Yeah, I mean, that's what he does. So, I mean, I don't mean to deny his malign effect on our communities, and particularly the ones in which he broadcasts, but his stock in trade is being outrageous. And so that people, so I would say, deal him the cruelest blow of all. Ignore him. Don't listen to him. I know. Maybe you're just reading Media Matters, which I would heartily recommend for people to check out as one of the news sites. But I don't know. I'm so over this guy, you know. All right. Thank you very much.
Yeah,
thanks
completely.
For the alert. You know, I cannot believe. I feel so remiss. You know, I rarely feel guilty in my life, but
I feel guilty because
you can see that monitor.
Yeah, I can.
I said that we were going to dedicate this program to the memory of historian Howard Zinn, who died at 87 this week. He was the author of the almost 2 million selling A People's History of the United States.
Bible.
Yeah. Says on my quote on my website, this is a loss of incalculable proportions. Howard made history a living, exciting treat to read as he took it out of the realm of the rulers and delivered it to the people. That's us. He'll be sorely missed.
Yeah, this one hurt. This one hurt real bad.
I had when you have a death in the family, it had that feeling. I mean, not like a parent or a sibling or a spouse or something like that, but
a comrade
or even like an uncle that you didn't see all the time, but you knew, 87. I mean, he was so vigorous. He was so involved. Here was a guy, working class origins. He served as a bombardier during World War II.
He was heavily involved in the civil rights movement.
Yeah. Yeah. And his history book, I mean, they first printed his book, 5,000 copies. Now it's up to almost 2 million. And
I've purchased two, of both of which I've given away.
And they're, I would recommend either just, if you're wondering, Howard Zinn, who is that?
Google him.
Google him.
Hours
Z-I-N-N. Or you can go to my website, Peter Werbe, WERBE.com. And there's the report of his passing. And he was so vigorous, he was swimming when he had a heart attack.
Was he really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't know that.
And a tribute to him by Noam Chomsky, Alice Walker, Naomi Klein, and
pretty heavy names.
Co-author, him talking, and this is on my site, talking about the 2008 elections, a quote or an article about what would Howard Zinn say if he were Barack Obama, Howard Zinn on human nature and aggression, on and on. Like that. I wrote to people. I sent it to you too. I said, I sometimes feel that there ought to be a requirement before you get on the air on this program that you'll have to have read A People's History of the United States.
Yeah, yep,
because,
absolutely.
Because without doing that, try to correct all the misconceptions of all the, how does that line go from Code of Criminal? When I look back on all the crap I learned in high school, mm-hmm. It's a wonder I can think at all.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that's not what high school teaches you, critical thinking. It teaches you official thinking, that it teaches you the manner in which the people that rule us want us to think. Howard Zinn looked at history how it is actually made. So,
I feel so bad for kids, too, not really learning the whole story.
Well, now it's all there. There is an internet. I mean, before the internet, if you didn't stumble upon something like Howard Zinn's book, and Howard Zinn's book wasn't even printed till 1980. I know that's 30 years ago.
Like what a great guy Christopher Columbus was.
Yeah.
They're still teaching him that.
Yeah, yeah. Or Andrew Jackson, or, all
on
the
Indian
killers.
On and on, yeah.
And, I mean, what's important is to look at the world, look at our history, look at ourselves as a people with eyes wide open, not through this mist and these myths, if you will, two separate things.
Called the media, the mainstream media, right?
And our textbooks as well. So I humbly dedicate this program to the memory of Howard Zinn.
Absolutely.
Someone who's had a tremendous effect on me and on Jolene.
You interviewed him so many times. And
you know, when people get to be a certain age, you got to, in fact, I'd called him, and you could just call his home.
Yeah, I used to call and set up interviews for you all the time.
He didn't have people. You would just call his home. And one time I asked him, I said, Howard, don't you get, because, you know, the right wing is such haters that they, you know, they harass people and they give death threats and all that. So I said, don't you get bothered by people, Howard? He said, oh, once in a while.
Really?
Yeah.
And he's such a mellow guy.
And finally, after one of the things that we almost, he and I finished every interview with, I said, well, Howard, how's it going trying to get a people's history of the United States on television? Because his friend Matt Damon, well, he was his friend because he lived next door, and Mrs. Zinn used to make cookies for Matt, little Matt. I just saw the Bourne Ultimatum again last night.
Oh, yeah.
But so Matt Damon finally put this all together.
The People Speak,
yeah.
So I still haven't seen it, Peter.
Well, I think it's still available on HBO. All right. Let's get back to our phone call, 313-298-WRIF. Here is Mike. Hi, Mike. You're on the air. What city are you calling from?
I'm calling from Bradenton, Florida.
Oh, boy. Okay, you're on the air.
This is Mike Gibson, a.k.a. Monster Mike.
Okay,
Monster Mike. Wow.
What's the temperature down there, man?
It's like, actually, it's kind of cold today. It's like 40s, like 45.
Wow. That's not worth going for.
But it's been warm on other days. It's been like 60s, 70s, 65, 75, something like that.
Yeah.
Anyway, the reason I called was, you know, it's not just Christians that are contributing to the fund in Haiti, the relief fund in Haiti. And people, I guess, like, they have something called, like, Christian First Response or something where certain Christian groups, you know, contribute, you know, supplies or money or monetary.
Yeah, a lot of Christian groups are down there.
But it's not just Christians. There's also a lot of atheist groups that are they're giving relief to Haiti. Like for instance, China, I guess, is really on the ball with that.
And so is Cuba.
Yeah. So
in fact, even Cuba and the United States have been cooperating on this.
And people think, oh, it's only Christians that are giving.
No. I mean, a lot of it is the United States government, and also groups like Doctors Without Borders. And my Tai Chi teacher said that they're acupuncturists without borders.
Really?
Yeah. And she was asking us. I hope she's not listening. Was asking us to contribute. I'm not going to give the, you know, I mean, acupuncture is cool, but Doctors Without Borders, I mean, they're
a great organization.
Yeah.
You can be a fan of them on Facebook.
Of what?
Of Doctors Without Borders.
Oh, I thought you
meant, I am a fan.
But right you are, Mike.
Yes. Yeah. Thanks for pointing that out.
We're freezing up here, but a few months, it'll be warm again. All right. Thanks for calling. Thanks for listening from so far away. Some open lines at 313-298-WRIF. Here's Matt in Detroit. Matt, hi. You're on the air.
Oh, hi.
Hi.
I just had a couple comments to make. I know it's way back in your conversation about the someone said something about concentration camps and stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah, this guy was paranoid that everyone was going to get, you know, gathered up and thrown in concentration camps.
Right. As far as the urban myth on that goes, I don't know if this is entirely an urban myth or if you have heard about this, but back when I was in school about 20 years ago, I had a fairly, you know, open-minded history teacher who told me that, I don't know where he got the information, that under Tricky Dick Nixon, he was so paranoid about the liberal movement in the United States that he was actually contemplating, or he had already set in place some plan to reopen the detention centers that they used during World War II for the Japanese.
They weren't immigrants. These were American citizens. Yeah.
Right. Yeah. Okay. That he was going to reopen those and police them and put every hippie or yippie
There were, in fact, well, let me say this.
I know where Peter Werby's ass would have been.
let me say this about that, that, in fact, that was the case. And all governments will do whatever is necessary to maintain their power and their rule. And, indeed, there were contingency plans to set up large-scale internment camps for if there were huge disturbances. Like, there were times in Washington, I think there was like 10,000 people arrested.
Oh my gosh.
Maybe, what year is it? I can't do the math. 30, 40 years ago or something like that, or a little less than 40 years ago. And do I think the United States government is capable of interning its own citizens? We did it once before under one of the most liberal presidents ever. Are they going to put people in internment camps or concentration camps simply because they have guns? Doesn't make a bit of sense. I mean, in fact, the logic would be if people that have guns are going to lose their freedom, it would make more sense not to have guns. So people say, well, we'll fight back. You can't fight back against the 101st Airborne or anything like that. So I guess what I think it is just rampant paranoia. But governments are extraordinarily dangerous. And I was saying this last week. They have this awful history. They arose as dictatorships, and it's only been the last couple hundred years we've had anything close to democratic governments where the people actually are have some say in things. And here in the United States, we're rapidly moving away from that is the corporations, not that they were, actually were weak, a few years ago or anything, but now they're going to have complete dominance. But you can see, for instance, when people go into opposition, you can look back in history and you look at what the National Guard did to students at Kent State. You look at what police all over the country did to the Black Panther Party. On and on like that. So any government, including ours, has the capacity to be murderous and tyrannical. Do I think this is on the agenda now? No. And why? I mean, the deal is, and where you can tell what whack jobs these people are, they begin to Barack Obama, who has not given the slightest indication of anything, of altering any policy that would suggest anything about that. He comes into office, and here's a guy that actually set up concentration camps where people were held incommunicado, were tortured, and what have you. And these folks are just going dum-da-dum-dum-dum. Suddenly Barack Obama gets elected, and they're thinking, oh, they're going to take away our guns. And
liberals.
Yeah, they're convinced. I don't get that. They're convinced they're going to take away people's guns, so they're going to get guns.
Yeah, just so they can take them away.
Yeah. It seems like a poor expenditure of money. If you're convinced that the government is going to take away guns, because believe me, there is not enough, even though this country is the most heavily armed country in the world. Oh, I don't know. We're like Pakistan and what else? Yemen and places like that. Iraq. That are similarly armed, and it's not going to happen, people. I mean, I'm not saying it's never going to happen, and there's not a fear of it, or that
there could be. You're not saying there's no possibility of policy change,
right? But it's not on the agenda. Now we ought to, if you have great concern for the direction of our country, worrying about gun confiscation is probably way down the list. All right, thank you very much, Matt. I appreciate it. We'll be right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jolene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Peter and Jolene are taking your calls at 313-298-WRIF.
That's what we do.
We'll be taking more of your calls right after this.
Verizon Wireless is the best destination for affordable, unlimited calling. And that's good to know, because you don't have unlimited funds. Is there a money tree in your garage? Or a goose laying golden eggs? Doubtful. And while you may find the end of the rainbow, you will likely not find a pot of gold. Yes, the hard truth is, you earn your money and want to spend it wisely. That's why Verizon Wireless gives you unlimited calling, now for less, $30 less than ever before. It's only $69.99 monthly access. Yes, get unlimited talk on America's largest and most reliable wireless network to any number in the U.S., even landlines, for a new lower price. And that's good, because sadly, buried treasure is only in pirate movies. To get our best value ever on unlimited calling, line, go to VerizonWireless.com/new, Verizon Wireless, or call 1-800 to join in. Activation, early termination, and other fees apply. Coverage details at VerizonWireless.com.
Are you having trouble paying your credit card bills? You didn't expect to get so deep in debt, but now you need a way out, a way to relieve the anxiety, a way to avoid disaster. If you have over $12,000 in credit card debt, call Debt Settlement USA at 1-877-560-8877. Debt Settlement USA has a proven debt reduction program that can cut the amount you owe and get you out of debt faster than you could on your own. They've saved millions of dollars for their clients, and they can help you get back in control again, too. If your resolution is to get out of debt, call Debt Settlement USA for a free consultation. 1-877-560-8877. Your call is confidential, and there's no obligation. If you have over $12,000 in credit card bills, they can cut the amount you owe and help you get out of debt. Call Debt Settlement USA right now. 1-877-560-8877. That's 1-877-560-8877.
Do you want a wireless laptop but your credit score is holding you back? We can help. Guaranteed. If you have a bank account and can afford weekly payments of just $29.99 for 12 months, we'll send you a brand new wireless laptop no matter what your credit looks like. Call Tronics Country now. You're approved for a brand new Dell or HP laptop. Call now and we'll also include a free MP3 player and free LCD TV with your paid order. Call 800-990-2258. Still not sure? Then hear what our customers say.
I'm really enjoying my laptop.
I just wanted to call to say how happy I am with it.
And I'm very pleased with their service, so I would suggest to anyone that is looking for computers or trying to find computers, Tronics is the best place to call.
Call now and lock in your free gifts. You will not be turned down. Call 800-990-2258. 800-990-2258. That's 800-990-2258.
We inherited this business from our father.
Who got it from his father?
We needed an emergency preparedness plan in case of fire, cyber attack,
or anything.
So we went to Ready.gov and got free checklists, templates, and more to be prepared. Thanks to Ready.gov, we worry less about keeping Rizzo and Sons in business.
Only it should be Rizzo and Grandsons.
And granddaughter.
Right.
Go to Ready.gov for details on creating an emergency preparedness plan. Becoming a success is hard work. Protecting it isn't. Brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security, the Ad Council, and this station.
Dimes are shiny and round. Nickels are also round.
This 28-year-old woman may sound a little strange to you and me, but to her 3-year-old daughter, she makes perfect sense.
Pennies are round, too.
They are. Dollars are rectangles.
I like dollars.
When you talk with your child, you build vocabulary, and learning starts long before school does. So follow their lead. Turn everyday moments into learning moments. For more tips, go to bornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
WRIF in WRIF HD1 Detroit. We're back with more Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Here are Peter and Julie.
All right, thank you very much. Welcome back to our second and final hour at 1 a.m. Eastern Time. My friend Francis Shore is going to join me. He's written a new book called Dying Empire, U.S. Imperialism and Global Resistance. Wow, that sounds rad.
Francis is smart.
Yeah, he is a smart guy. Prophet Wayne State.
Yeah.
I'm
looking forward to that.
Well, it's just, it's about imperial overreach. And everybody's done it, from Rome to England to France to the Netherlands to Portugal.
Mm-hmm.
And you burst, and I was talking about last week, you burst beyond your borders, beyond your geography, and after a while, you're spending, a greater and greater proportion of your treasury on maintaining the empire. And it works for a while, because I guess in those other countries, it was almost completely a drain, although they were looting other sectors of the world. And the United States does that to not the extent it was done so directly, and when, the empires that had colonies, but I don't know, it's kind of complicated. But rather, what we've had to do is become immersed in this military-industrial complex that that just doesn't work. We can't just spend trillions and trillions and trillions and trillions of dollars on this, what it essentially is capital-intensive instead of labor-intensive work. I mean, in other words, all this money spent, which is taken from us, the taxpayer, and then taxpayers, and then it's re-spent on military expenditures. It doesn't work as as the keystone of an economy. Britta Bell, she's got more to her name than that. Britta Belli is her name. She's the editor of E, the environmental magazine. It's been around for 20 years. In fact, it's their 20th anniversary, and a nice conversation with her.
Okay.
There's one of my little publications that actually, paper, not on the internet, although I guess you can get it now, as that. It's called The Left Business Observer, and it's an economic publication. And sometimes I go, okay, this is going to tell me what it's all about. And then I read, can't understand what it's all about. But, you know, in his State of the Union talk, that Obama said that he's going to call for a three-year freeze on spending on domestic programs. It's actually just another one of these political ruses, because it doesn't represent a great sector of the economy, and yet it's going to probably hurt what we're concerned the most, and that is goods and services provided by the government to the people. And I'm not talking about the welfare. I'm talking about Medicare, stuff like that. But here, this is what, so there's a concern. There's this huge debt. You look at any right-wing news site, they're saying, Obama's got this enormous debt. And it's not the best thing in the world, but up till this latest crisis, a lot of us carried debt. And it was something that was just taken for granted. And as long as it didn't get out of hand, it was okay. But the idea is that it's getting out of hand. Well, this is what it says in this week, or I guess it's this month, Left Business Observer, and I think all of it is written by Doug Henwood. You can go, where's their website? LeftBusinessObserver.com. I should put this on my site, too, because what I've begun doing at Peter Werbe, W-E-R-B-E.com, I have a little section off to the right that says books mentioned or relevant to Night Call and or Peter's interviews.
Right.
So if you click on that, for instance, we dedicated the show to Howard Zinn, you can go to that and you'll find A People's History in the United States.
You find Fran Shore's book on there?
Yeah, that's in the guest section.
Okay.
There's a lot of, I think my site is probably too hard to navigate.
Is it too complicated?
Yeah. Anyway, here's what Doug Henwood says in Left Business Observer. According to the Congressional Budget Office, those are the folks in Congress that figure out where all the money's going, federal debt was about 41% of GDP, gross domestic product, in 2008, and is likely to rise to about 67% of GDP in 2016, about where we were in 1951.
Yeah.
So this is not unprecedented. The debt burden is roughly where Britain is now, and well below that of Belgium, which is 90%, and Italy, 98%.
No kidding.
And he says, that's not to say that a debt-GDP ratio approaching 70% isn't a problem. It is. Servicing debts, in other words, you got to pay interest on them, that high eat up a lot of resources better spent on more ennobling things. But it's not a crippling disaster by any means. And there are plenty of resources. Here's the important part. If you didn't, all that GDP to debt didn't make a lot of sense, it's some figures. What the hell does this mean? But what is being suggested here is pretty easy. So there are plenty of resources around for paying down that debt over time. The Pentagon hoovered up. What does hoovered mean as a verb?
That's like sucking up.
Yeah. Like the vacuum cleaner.
Yeah.
Okay. Hoovered up. Oh, wow. $657 billion in fiscal 2009, 4.6% of GDP, its biggest share since 1992. Over the next decade, the CBO projects we'll spend $7.4 trillion on the military, and an amount almost equal to the government's entire public debt in 2009 and over half its projected debt in 2019. Merely reducing the number of troops deployed in Iraq and Afghanistan to 30,000, according to the CBO, would save $1.1 trillion over the decade. Merely taking the military share of GDP back to 2000's level, hardly a radical measure, would save $1.8 trillion. So this is where this is all going, folks. We're not there because there's some welfare welfare mom, you know, getting some food stamps or anything like that. It's because that great sucking sound is the military-industrial complex. So here's another way we could deal with the debt. Tax the rich. What the hell? They just agreed to do that in Oregon. Here are some of the back of the virtual envelope estimates. Raising taxes on the top 5%, average income, $520,000 a year. Okay, that's, you know, that's like the people that work for, what's the big, not Merrill Lynch,
any of those big investment firms.
Yeah, all the big investment firms. That's what they make. By five percentage points, would yield another $150 billion a year or so. Gently squeeze those just below them by another 3 points, you've got $200 billion. Adjust that tax bite for inflation and economic growth, and you've got another $2.5 trillion over the next decade. So you're talking about the top 5%. In other words, nobody listening here is going to be would be affected by this whatsoever.
But that you know of.
That we would get out of debt. Yeah, there's probably a couple of you. But we would get out of debt. Combine these military cuts and the tax increases, and you bring in or save $4.3 trillion. Seems to work as far as I...
a lot of dough.
Yeah. And he says, even these modest measures, sprinkling, not soaking the rich and cutting the Pentagon back to its still mighty levels of 2000, are politically unimaginable, however. So we're just going to be in hock to China. That's it. There's no political will here.
Meanwhile, China's not very happy with us.
No. Right. What the hell is going on here? Let's rattle the cage of the most powerful country in the world soon. And that's China. I guess we're still the most powerful country now. And economically, are we? Well, what do you think? 313-298-WRIF. Let's, here is Joe in Berkeley. He's been waiting a long time. Sorry, Joe, you're on the air.
Hey, it's cool. Well, this is about the Christian thing and the Pope and stuff.
Whipping himself, yeah.
Well, like, I just want to make it clear that guy is crazy, because I've been a Christian born and raised since, like, I can remember, and I've never had to whip myself for feeling bad for sinning. No one else I know has. I just think it's like some weird medieval practice that I've heard, like, from the Da Vinci Code.
Well, it is a Catholic thing.
It's an actual thing, yeah.
Well, like, I've just never heard of anyone who would go do that, actually, because that's just stupid.
Well, it strikes me like that. So should a guy that does something stupid become a pope? Actually, I'm not a pope, a saint. I mean,
the entire Catholic Church?
I don't care. It's their deal. So I don't care who they make saints or whatever. But I'll tell you what. Look up mortification of the flesh. Or just look up mortification. Just Google it or go to Wikipedia, and you'll see the whole deal.
Wow, mortification of the flesh?
Or just mortification. Yeah, put mortification of the flesh.
It'll be more fun.
It sounds like some crazy metal band or something, I swear.
It totally does. I think you can hear that band on Midnight Metal on 101 WRIF.
Yeah, Jade's on there. Along with somebody else. Who else is on there?
Along that note. Well, Slayer.
Yeah, no, I'm only kidding.
Oh. Winston Smith wrote
Joe.
Peter, on this very note here. Why self-flagellation? Catholicism is filled with expressions of sexual sadomasochism, he says.
Wow.
Strong.
Here's Antonio in Roseville. Antonio, hi, you're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi, I was calling to get your support on some demonstrations coming up.
Sure, what's up?
There's one on Thursday against DTE. Welfare Rights is putting it out. It starts at 12 noon.
I mean, because of all the
Third and Bagley
downtown at their headquarters, because they're doing all these shutoffs.
They're doing all the shutoffs, yeah. And then the other ones at Andiamos in Dearborn, because the owners retaliating against the workers for having a union. They're not paying their overtime.
Yeah.
And there's an article about it in the Metro Times.
Yeah, there is. That's the Restaurant Organizing Committee is putting that one together. Well, that's a labor management dispute there, and that's being addressed by the workers there. But, you know, and hopefully that'll come to a just conclusion. But there's something particularly awful about, you hear these ads, DTEs, is, if you're getting behind in your...
Just call this number.
Call this number and what have you. But the fact that in the city of Detroit, there's been thousands of shutoffs of...
Terrible.
Of water, of gas.
Yeah.
In fact, the welfare rights organization that's calling this has charged that because of these shutoffs that these companies have, they say, this is
people
their
are dying.
Murdered two people.
Whoa.
Because what happens is people start getting like kerosene heaters and what have you.
And, exactly. And these people are ruthless. I have people, friends that I know who have gotten into trouble and who have called and,
Doesn't work?
No. They said no dice. So what's the real story? We'll find out.
And all right, Antonio, thank you very much. And Welfare Rights Organization, they're out there fighting for poor people. Here is Tom in St. Paul, Minnesota. Tom, hi, you're on the air.
Good evening. First and foremost, I wanted to thank you for paying tribute to Howard Zinn.
But sort of belatedly, I meant to do it right off the top. I have it on the top of my website. How that?
You know what, Howard?
Howard
was such a cool guy. He would forgive you for that.
Glad you did it.
Yeah.
Howard would tell you, to get anything done, it takes a while. So, you're right in his mode. However, power concedes nothing without a demand is something, I don't know if he said that, but I often heard him quote it.
Frederick Douglass, the great African-American abolitionist, said that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it seems to me that in honor of Howard Zinn and, you could even put it in honor of Ted Kennedy and a whole bunch of people, but it seems like we have a critical mass of public outrages that, remember the Declaration of Independence had, about the first couple of paragraphs was about, it's we the people and we all have these rights. But then the rest of it was all this list of petitions against the king. Since you did this and this is, clearly outrageous. Since you did that and that's clearly outrageous. And so there was this whole laundry list that brought along different constituencies, I'm signing that. I think that the tea thing was a whatever.
Yeah.
But I think that we could put together 10 things, to petition the government. And you know how we've had all, they submit petitions for health care. We're circulating petitions like, the Xerox company is just like loving us or something. But if we get like 10 points, like, a total laundry list, just like the Declaration of Independence, just real succinct,
Yeah, well,
healthcare.
Yeah, and I mean, we take it around and have people sign it?
Yeah, but we get, we don't have gay rights in there. We don't have abortion in there. We have things like, all elections federal level must be done with a paper trail ballot.
Mm-hmm.
If necessary, you have 2 days to count your paper. But we need it, so it can't be rigged. Public financing of elections, so huge corporations and media companies can't enrich themselves and distort our politics.
Well, wait, Tom. You're going to give me a good liberal laundry list of all the things we should be addressing. I mean, we've got to reinvent politics, and I'm not saying that is not a worthy way, because one of the things that happens, for instance, if you have had petitions like that, and there was a national movement, you actually had to go door-to-door in your neighborhood and had literature that fleshed all of that out, that'd be a great way to do things, because now, the Supreme Court just handed the government completely over to the corporation. Before, it was only mostly handed over to the corporation. Now it's 100%. So in a lot of ways, we've got to go back to the drawing boards of how we want to approach politics, because the door is being slammed in our face for real change. And now, lots and lots of Democrats have been pretty disappointed, or up to very disappointed, or people that voted for Barack Obama, very disappointed, and they're just sort of peeling off in terms of support. So it's, you know, the Republicans are having this revival. I see all these things, and they're just thinking, oh yeah, we're going to blow out the Democrats in the off-year elections, in November, and yeah, okay, we'll get the Republicans back in. And then people about 2 years later, they go, geez, these guys suck so bad. I got an idea. Let's get the Democrats back in. And then, you know, we'll be on this merry-go-round for the rest of history if, you know, we don't blow ourselves up or poison ourselves or whatever the hell else it would happen. So, yeah, I'm not, that might be a good tactic among many. But we've got to go back to the drawing boards. And one of the drawing boards is going to turn out to be the U.S. Social Forum. If you go to my website or just Google United States Social Forum, we're at ground zero of capitalist crisis in Detroit. Not even so much necessarily in the Detroit area. It's not just restricted to the city limits. But the city limits, I mean, we're talking about massive depression levels of misery. And that's where this United States Social Forum is going to take place in June. I think it's June 20th to 26th, something like that. Maybe the 22nd to the 26th. But in any event, it's on my website as well, peterwerby.com. But we've got to start reinventing or thatch our roofs. All right, Tom, thank you very much. Appreciate it. So open lines, finally, 313-298-WRIF. Let's see. Here's Fred in Detroit. Hi, Fred. You're on the air.
Hi, Peter. Hi, Jolene.
Hi.
Hi, Fred.
Okay, I want to speak on a couple of things. I'll try to keep them short.
Okay.
First is Obama and the Democrats. I think that they're, you know, this is no big defense of them. I just see them as swimming against a much larger tide of hate. And we don't have the kind of numbers the teabaggers have because we're too busy out there trying to survive.
Oh, we've got more than they do, Fred.
I'm sure, but they're the people who are retired with all the pensions and whatnot, and they can take their time off since they got a couple of homes, and they can make all the big gatherings and whatnot. You know,
one of the things, yeah, you get this thing, you got these people in there, you know, you see their ages, they're 67, 68, you know, 71, and they're saying, I don't want any government health care. And I'm thinking, wait a minute, aren't all these people on Medicare? Isn't that universal single-payer health care?
Well, it just shows what a bunch of crappy hypocrites they really are. Like you said, they're going to hate it when the Republicans get back in.
Yeah.
But now, as far as nuclear power goes, that was a second thing.
Sure.
I think there may have to be some sort of trade-off only in that area because I really don't want any more coal to be burned.
Right.
And I would like for some scientist, some engineer to sit down sometime and explain why we can or can't make hydrogen fuel cells off of nuclear power as a sort of a byproduct, and then use it cheaply or mainly for powering mass transit.
But look at Fred. First, and I'm sure I'm not telling you anything you don't know already, and that is if we instituted real conservation, just use less, you know, we don't have to light up all these skyscrapers all night. You know, there's thousands, tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of watts are just with these spotlights beamed at these buildings. And it's not security. It's just to give it, you know, the edifice of power and, you know, officialdom and all that. And then, the obvious things of solar power and wind power and what have you. And guess who's starting to walk away with alternative energy production? China! Suddenly they've arisen as the leaders in wind generators and solar panel production. I mean, these unions that want jobs like at nuclear power plants or construction, the construction industry and the construction unions are way for nuclear power because they cost billions billions and billions and billions of dollars to construct. I mean, overall, if you're doing a bunch of them, and that means thousands and thousands of jobs. But we're setting the stage for poisoning ourselves. So I think there's other alternatives between, you know, there has to be.
Going green.
Go green. All right, Fred, thank you very much. Appreciate your call. Let's see here. Answer the question. Okay. Here is Eric in Ypsilanti. Hi, Eric. You're on the air.
Oh, hey, guys. I have got a lot of things to talk about.
Okay.
For one, these far right wing saying that this administration is going to take your guns away, which is a load of crap.
Yeah.
And number two is, have you seen Secretary Tim Geithner sweating when Congress was nailing him about how he bailed out Wall Street and everything?
I didn't see the sweat. Wouldn't you be?
I don't know. He seems unapologetic.
Yeah,
you know?
It's all coming out in sweat.
Oh, well, he should be apologetic. But number three, I see myself as physical conservative because I'm in the middle of the road politically.
Mm-hmm.
I think Obama's doing the right thing by, like, cutting spending, but he should be cutting spending on the military as well.
Well, that spending he's talking about is this. I've sort of lost the figures here, but it's a very, very small. Oh, wait. Let me see. Do I have it here? President Obama. This is Joe Comerford, Executive Director of the National Priorities Project. This is actually a very good website. It's nationalpriorities.org, and it shows how much of our money is going to the military and what that is costing Detroit, for instance, or Ypsilanti. You can just go to nationalpriorities.org, you type in Ypsilanti, Michigan, and you see what your what you're paying. So here's what, I don't know whether it's a he or she, J.O., I guess, usually a woman, Jillian, it was J.O.? Yeah, usually.
Yeah.
Anyway, President Obama's plan to freeze so-called non-security discretionary spending could spell disaster for a broad range of federal programs. The proposed freeze is actually a cut. The proposal caps non-security spending at $447 billion for each of the next three fiscal years. During that time, inflation will erode the purchasing power of that total, requiring additional cuts in services in each successive year. While meaningless in reducing the deficit, these cuts could be devastating to non-security discretionary programs such as, hey, nutrition, education, energy, and transportation. These types of programs account for only 17% of total federal spending, yet they'll absorb all of the proposed cuts. So we're talking about cuts in nutrition, education, energy, and transportation. She says military spending, which in the current fiscal year represents roughly 55% of discretionary spending, will be spared the budget knife, and all indications are that military spending will go up next year. In fact, based on the Office of Management and Budget's projections, as part of the fiscal year 2010 budget released last year, we will spend an additional $522 billion on the military over the next decade. So he's not doing a thing. This is, he's just playing. I mean, this is Republican light.
Oh, that sucks.
yeah, well, there you
big
go.
Big time.
That sums it up, I'd say.
And also, I can't believe the U.S. Senate voted to have what's-his-face as Treasury of the Fed, Ben Bernanke.
Yeah.
It was 70 to 30 and 60. I think it was like 69 to 30.
Well, they started saying, who was it? Was it Vice President Biden or somebody along the line said, we don't renominate him and approve him, the stock market will crash. So, as usual, it's blackmail. All right, Eric, thanks for calling 313-298-WRIF. We have some open lines for you if you'd like to grab them. Here is Regina. She's in East Point. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for accepting my call.
Sure.
I've been reading Elmore Leonard for years. And it's called The Freaky Deek.
The Freaky Deaky.
Oh, thank
yes.
you.
And you know what? I went into a Zen mode.
Yeah.
And I got it within like 25 seconds.
Wow. Let me say, we were talking earlier about how the school in Racine, Wisconsin was trying to stop kids doing any, quote, dirty dancing. I was trying to think of that. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, I want to tell you listeners, the people that are out of work, get a book. Get Elmore Leonard. Because it'll take you away and you will be like... It will help you with your psyche, you know. If you're going through a hard time, go to the library and get his books because they are amazing. He's probably the most amazing author I've ever read. And, you know, they make all those movies, Kill Bill, and they bastardize his books, and people really need to read it because you are there.
Kill Bill was what was his book?
Oh, I don't know. It was that other one.
Get Shorty.
Yeah, but I, you know, I've read so many of Elmore Leonard's books, and I can't remember hardly any of the titles.
Oh, I know every single one.
Well, name
and,
a couple.
I've been recommending these for years to my friends.
Like what? Can you remember any off the top of your head?
Oh, jeez. Right now I can't.
Well,
I mean, they take you away, and you know what? You're in the Detroit area.
Well, I was going to say, they don't entirely take you away. They take you right into
you know exactly what he's talking about. You're in New Baltimore.
Yeah. Well,
you know, you're in Detroit. And every single moment of his book, you are in that moment.
Yeah, he is absolutely incredible. And one of the things that when I'm reading Elmore Leonard, get a list of his books so that Regina and I aren't totally. I mean, how can you read all these books? The only thing I can think of is Get Shorty. I've seen that movie. I've read the book and I've seen the movie. I've seen the movie probably at least three times.
I've seen it more than that because I used to be married to someone who watched that movie over and over and over.
And what was the sequel? Hey, Regina, thank you very much. I appreciate your call. 313-298-WRI.
I'm trying, Peter. You know this computer is...
No, I know. But what was the sequel to Get Shorty? I saw that, too.
I can't remember.
All right. We can't remember anything. It's getting late. You know, in exactly 7.5 hours, I have to be at the courthouse in Pontiac to do jury duty. I can't believe this.
That's kind of brutal. You'll be fine.
Yeah.
You can do it.
I know. Well, I don't know. I don't think they're going to keep me on the jury. Do I need a shave? Yeah. I probably need a shower. Am I going to change? No. I mean, hopefully they'll kick me off. I hope the judge isn't listening or anything. My fear is that I'll wind up sequestered in some 3-month trial. No,
I can't do this show alone.
No, I got all these interviews that I previously record that play on this show at 1 a.m. to do this week.
Yeah.
All right, let's continue on. Here's Brandon in KPAC. Hey, Brandon, you're on the air. Hey, Brandon, what's up?
The name of the movie is Too Short, by the way.
It is?
No.
No. I think it's Too Short with two spelled also. But I was calling about the recent legislative changes out in California where they're trying to legalize marijuana for personal and recreational use.
Right.
I was wondering approximately, you know, how long you think it would be for them and, you know, as far the opposite as Michigan is, how long would it be for us?
Well, I mean, till it happens?
Yeah, till we can, you know, their prop is they have something where they're saying something about, like, growing, selling, possessing, smoking. And
up to an ounce, up to possession of an ounce, and then it would be. But they're I don't know how they're talking about doing it, because on one hand, they're talking about it being a state revenue, which would be taxed. It would have to be regulated and taxed. On the other hand, they're talking about people being able to grow their own. But and it'll be a voter proposition, just like any number of other, like the medical marijuana a proposition that won here in Michigan, and I think it'll pass. But you know, there are actually you can't have state laws that violate federal laws, and there's something called the Marijuana Stamp Tax Act. Now, it was put in the late 30s.
I remember this.
And you have, in other words, one of the feds could actually prosecute everybody that's arrested on state or local charges for marijuana for not having a marijuana stamp tax, a marijuana stamp in their possession, which they're required to purchase from the federal government. I don't know if anybody does it. Maybe there are some vipers using that old 1930s, 40s term for people that smoke the evil weed.
No.
could remind us of the history. But I don't know, Brandon. I mean, what they've done, they've organized in Michigan to get the medical marijuana. Sure, people can do it here as well. So it's just a matter of doing it. All
Peter,
right, thank you.
Elmore Leonard, The Bounty Hunters?
Yeah.
Does that sound right?
No.
Okay. Be Cool. That's the one he was talking about. Be Cool was the one.
That was the...
How about Pagan Babies?
No, actually, you know what? Let's take a break, and then I will look at the list, because I don't want to think
of
There's
a lot of them.
Yeah, and the guy is amazing. Actually, a friend of mine that we were talking about that, is Freaky Deaky on there? Is that the actual name of the book? I think it is.
Right. Oh, there it is. Yeah. It sure is.
Freaky Deaky, a friend of mine, was a fact checker on, in other words, even somebody the caliber of Elmore Leonard had this friend of mine do fact-checking for that book. And some of the facts that he did were checking on the details of the dance because, you know, Dutch is a cool dude, but, you know, he's an old white guy from the suburbs. And the Freaky Deaky was like an inner-city dance. And they always used to claim that, you know, huge fights would break out in inner-city neighborhoods because people, you know, found somebody doing the Freaky Deaky with their girlfriend. So there you go. We come back. We haven't talked about rocket launchers in a while. Actually, let me see. I have this right here. I don't know if I can get this on. This is Bruce Coburn, and it's called If I Had a Rocket Launcher. This is, well, let me turn. This is when he was in Guatemala. So he's not talking about having a rocket launcher here in the United States.
Second time today, everybody scatters and hopes it goes away. How many kids they've murdered, only God can say.
Play the whole thing. In fact, I think
he's so good.
I think he's a Christian pacifist.
He is.
I think so. Maybe somebody knows more about Bruce Coburn than I do, but I think he is. And one of the last lines is, he said, "If I had a rocket launcher, some son of a bitch would die." And here he's talking about having been in these Guatemalan villages.
Not very passive.
No, I know. And in fact, some of the visuals that I'm looking, Bruce Coburn is spelled C-O-C-K. B-U-R-N, like something, you know, you would get from having sex on the rug,
painful.
On a rug or something like that. But it's pronounced Coburn. But, you know, actually, I'm going to turn this off. The visuals are very, very disturbing. So he saw these, you know, U.S. taxpayer-financed, this is from like the 80s, helicopters come and strafe these Indian villages, this genocidal allies of, you know, the Reagan and Bush administration of the 1980s. And so he said, I forgot how he phrased it, something the meanest song he ever wrote. I mean, usually he's got a lot of wonderful love songs and all that.
Yeah.
I think, where is he from? Toronto, isn't he?
I'm not sure.
I think so. All right. Anybody know Bruce Coburn's religious affiliation? Well, I don't know.
That could be
a showstopper.
That's
never mind.
Asking a lot.
Yeah,
Peter.
Just do us in it.
But someone knew Freaky Deaky.
That's right. All right. Right back.
You're listening to Night Call with Peter Werby and Jalene Jordan on 101 WRIF. Let your opinion be heard. Call us at 313-298-WRIF.
Whatever's going on, it seems to be far from over.
Peter and Jalene will be taking more of your calls right after this.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101 WRIF.
The Ref.
This is your Travel Minute. If you're planning a flight for business or pleasure anytime soon, here's the 3-1-1 rule for carry-on luggage to ease your way through airport security lines. Rule 1. Only 3-ounce or smaller containers of liquid or gel are permitted in carry-on luggage. However, larger containers are permitted in your check-in baggage. 2. Place your 3-ounce or smaller containers into one 1-quart size clear plastic zip-top bag. Only one bag bag per traveler is allowed. 3. Place the bag into the security bin with your shoes and other items as required for scanning. The rules for other personal items vary, so it's a good idea to check with your airline or travel agent before you pack for your trip.
Your Travel Minute is a public service by this station and ASTA, the American Society of Travel Agents.
These days, people of all ages, including adults, can have a perfect smile. Thanks to today's technology, people with crooked teeth may no longer need to wear metal braces. One option many adults prefer is invisible braces. Instead of the typical metal bands or brackets that are cemented to teeth, these braces are clear plastic trays. Some advantages of invisible braces are they can be removed for eating and for brushing and flossing. They are practically invisible to see, and they are less irritating to gums than traditional braces. Keep in mind that invisible braces are only available for people who need minor corrective work. If you are considering braces and would like to learn more about invisible braces, speak with your dentist. You're never too old for a beautiful smile. For the ADA Dental Minute, I'm Dr. Maria Lopez Howell. For more information, visit our website at ada.org.
Energy Hog the team. Infiltrate the house and waste some energy.
No problem. It's got leaky windows
and no attic insulation.
Perfect. Now go wild and waste some wattage.
The Mitchell House. A house like many others, except this one's under attack by energy hogs. They show up anywhere energy is being wasted.
Talk to me, hogs.
Washer, it's not Energy Star rated.
Outstanding. What about the thermostat?
Not programmable.
Looks like we're living high on the hog.
Only one person has the power to get rid of energy hogs. You.
Hold on. Someone's home.
And he's got energy efficient light bulbs.
To find out how you can fight energy hogs, log on to energyhog.org. You'll find fun games and lots of tips on making your home more energy efficient.
Now he's installing Energy Star appliances.
Not Energy Star. That's it. Get out of there. I'll get you, energyhog.org.
Hey, wait for me.
Brought to you by the Alliance to Save Energy, the Department of Energy, and the Ad Council.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Voice your opinion at 313-298-WRIF. That's 313-298-9743. Now, here are Peter Werby and Julene Jordan.
All right, welcome back to our final segment. There's open lines, 313-298-WRIF. At 1 a.m., a couple of interesting interviews. Please stay tuned for that. Man.
Peter?
Hey, what?
Got an email that I want to tell you about.
Okay, go ahead.
Joe wrote in, why do you always bellyache, Peter, about spending on the defense budget? National defense, according to Joe, is one of the few things the Constitution explicitly calls for the federal government to provide for, not education to the citizens.
Well, I suppose one has priorities. It's unnecessary. I'm looking at this. Good question, though. Joe, is it? Yeah. William Hardung, who I've interviewed before, who is director of the Arms and Security Initiative at the New America Foundation, says we have a permanent war budget, and most of it isn't even used to fight wars. It's mostly a giveaway to the Pentagon and its favorite contractors. Now, again, let me stress that it's not like all this money is taken from us in taxes and then given to the Pentagon and then they have a big bonfire and they burn it up. I mean, they buy stuff. They hire people. But it's, as this says, it's favored contractors. And we're still preparing for this war that could be fought against something like the Soviet Union. So there's billions and billions of dollars for exotic fighters and all sorts of war fighting machinery that's not necessary. And the problem with this is that, and there's statistics on this somewhere, Joe, that if you spend $5 billion in the military industrial complex, let's say you get 2,000 jobs. And if you spend it in the private sector on non-military stuff, you get 10,000 jobs. So we're not getting much of a kick for our money for that we're paying in. And why is there, why if, we have these trillions of dollars that we expend on this this planning for war, and doesn't seem to keep us safe. Can't keep a guy from flying into Detroit,
exactly.
You know, with
a bomb on his
balls.
In his underwear.
Yes.
In his balls.
Can I say that?
Ouch.
Yeah, man. Man, what a way to go. What a guy.
Yeah, I mean, talk about a martyr.
Yeah. Here's Kevin in
you know, that really,
wait, hold on, Kevin.
It doesn't make a lot of sense because, you know, they're promised all the virgins.
Yeah.
His equipment would have been ruined.
I know. Well,
bad thinking.
You just hang on.
All the way around.
Yeah. Here's Kevin in Ameda. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Click on it, Peter.
Oh, yeah. Sorry. Yeah, go ahead,
first
Kevin.
First time caller on any radio station.
Welcome.
Wow.
How are you?
Good.
Great. Welcome.
Yes, thank you. I have been involved with wind turbines now for 3 years.
There we go.
Talk about going
green.
Yes, it's a good job to have. You have to travel a lot, but you have to go where the work is. You know, Michigan's a little bit behind. Granholm is trying.
Mm-hmm.
But if you go to www.michiganconstructionnews.com on November 20th, 2009, there is a great article, and 80% of the overall cost of wind turbines goes to China. And that's why a lot of the unions are not for the wind turbines. It's ridiculous that we cannot build them here,
right,
in the United States.
You know, wind turbines are pretty huge, and you imagine what it takes to ship them over here. I mean, you would think that it would be cost effective to, in fact, I mean, they got much lower labor costs, but even still, I mean, labor costs are exaggerated in terms of what they present in the overall price of a commodity. But we should be making them raw air. What about don't we have some industrial facilities in the Detroit area that might use a little retrofitting?
Yes, they're empty.
Yeah, there you go.
And that's one of the fights with Local 58, which I'm a member of, is, you know, we can make them here proudly. And they make them in Denmark. They ship them all the way to China to assemble them. They don't assemble them, but they put in all your computer chips and your wiring and so on and so forth. Then they ship them all the way from Denmark to China, then all the way to anywhere in the United States.
Now, wait a minute. Kevin, the Local 58 is the IBEW, the International Brotherhood of Electrical Workers?
That's correct.
So, and tell me what they're doing in terms of, you just sort of passed over that. What's their idea on this?
Well, it would be nice to have them built here.
Okay. That's right, because the Local 58 people I know, they're working. I mean, I know friends of mine that live a block away, and they're working in Morgantown, West Virginia.
Oh, of course, and that's why I travel doing what I do. I have worked all over the country doing these wind turbines because it's a good job. But it's a job. Even if I didn't like it, I would have to do it. Otherwise, I'll lose my home.
Gotcha.
Yeah. You know, but I just wanted to give you that, you know, that that tidbit in this magazine is great. And like I said, I've done a lot of different wind turbines. I've done GE wind turbines and Vestas wind turbines, and they're all made overseas.
Yeah, a shame. All right, thanks for the update, Kevin. I appreciate it. And, yeah, support your union, and looks like they're got a good perspective on things. Thank you. Appreciate your call. Let's see. Here's Erock in Brownstown. Hi, hey, Erock, you're on the air.
It's Township of Brownstown.
Brownstown Township.
Okay.
The new lithium ion capital of the world.
They're building the battery out there, right?
I don't know. Moleface thinks, send her ass back to Canada. This is Eric Edwards, and I'm from Southgate, Michigan.
Yeah.
I've been listening to you since I was 11. I grew up down the street from Henry VIII, Padded Cell, Seigel's, 1965.
Yeah.
Now we got Hessler. He's got shot for a interracial photo. That guy.
Who's this? What are you talking about?
The guy that owns a Hustler.
Yeah.
Larry Flint.
Oh, Larry Flint, yeah.
Yeah, that was an interracial photograph. And James Earl Ray Day. Martin Luther King, God bless.
Hurrah!
Yeah.
Hi, Jolene and Peter and Company.
Yeah. Hi.
Incorporated.
Yeah.
And Metallica.
Really?
And
this is like the 60s, you know.
Free association.
Yeah.
Bruce Dickinson. His friends pushed him up on, put him up on stage, and then Bruce pushed him off at Harpo's. Lights were on him. He couldn't see nothing.
Wow. Man, Larry Flint, we got a little Metallica, the lithium battery.
Yeah.
He tested, and my car ran out of gas, 75 at the Goddard overpass.
I'll have one of what you're having.
legalization of marijuana.
Yeah.
This, the greatest country in the world, the richest Americans don't pay the taxes, only welfare left to corporate welfare, Eric Edwards' philosophy doctrine.
Okay.
I got to call Examinal Bayul.
Well, listen, we're going to have to cut this one short.
Examinal
Bayul, Russian skater.
All right.
Wow.
Thanks a lot, man.
You get the award tonight.
Yeah, you did. I love that. Here's Dennis in Taos. Hey, you're catching us way up there?
Yes. Yeah. Well, no, I'm down in the Detroit area.
Oh, hey, Dennis, is there any snow up there? I had to come cross-country skiing
very
up
little.
There.
Very little. In fact, being in Iosco County, we've got the cross-country ski capital of the state.
Absolutely.
And, it's not good up there.
Wow, because that's wonderful trails up there usually.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
But we haven't really gotten any snow since Christmas.
Yeah, there was a big snow, right? And then nothing.
Yeah.
It's all down in Arkansas.
Most of it's brown ground now. You know, I mean, we've got a festival getting ready to start next weekend, and they were a little leery of even having the ice fishing contest because the bay itself hasn't been real solid.
Really? I mean, after all these days? I mean, I was thinking about going out.
It's getting there now.
Yeah.
But I'm saying here just within the last couple weeks, no, there was still open water in the bay. I mean, the marina itself was frozen up because the water doesn't move around in the marina.
Yeah.
But just outside the wall of the marina there, it was still cracking up and coming in and out.
Yikes. Yeah.
So
what's on your mind, Dennis? What's up?
Well, I was hearing you talk about the marijuana and the laws and everything. A friend of mine was tearing down Toll Town back when they built the new GM plant.
Right.
And they actually got into a building that used to be a doctor's office.
Mm-hmm.
And in his office, he had liquid cannabis.
Liquid cannabis?
Yes. It was in a small bottle with a cork top on it. I actually possess the bottle right now with just a collection of some of the other stuff. But it looked like the doctor's office had completely closed up because it was uncashed checks from 1950s.
Wow.
1951 and 52, had a four-digit phone number for business cards and everything in this office. But it looked like they just closed up on a Friday and never came back.
Wow, maybe they were into the little vial or something like that.
I'm not sure. I mean, he had, there was a liquid white pine morphine, quarter-pound cans of ether, things like that that they used back in the 50s. But the liquid cannabis was actually legal up until the late 30s.
Yeah. I have a T-shirt that actually has, what does it say? I can't remember. Yeah, I think it says cannabis. That's right. It's like a medicinal product.
Yeah. It says right on the bottle that the indica plant is with the parts that are used and the tops. I mean, it actually describes what portion of the plant is used to make this liquid cannabis.
And then, though, that all these nut jobs like Harry Anslinger, who's the first head of the United States Narcotics Department, figured out that there was great harm being done to the youth of America. That's when it Reefer Madness came out.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah. And
go ahead.
So I was just going to say, then, so we've spent trillions of dollars, made millions of people into criminals because they wanted to smoke flowers and change their consciousness. And it was okay if you did it if you were drinking, but not smoking. But before that, it was okay if you smoked. In the 20s, it was okay if you smoked, but you couldn't drink. So go figure.
We need to get this right.
And then they turned it around because the powers of being got control over the alcohol, like the Kennedys and the Rockefellers and everything like that. That's when they legalized it, because then they had the control over all of the processing and bringing it in and making money off of the alcohol.
There. Sure. That was old Joe Kennedy, the patriarch of the Kennedy clan, was a bootlegger. Dennis, I've only got about a minute or two left, so I want to thank you for joining us. I hope you get some snow. Look out your window. What's the big Corsairs, right?
Yes.
That's the big trick. So you might see me shooting down the trails. So let's hope we can get some snow up there. Thank you very much. That's weird to say. I hope we get some snow. I do. I hope we get some snow.
Yeah, you're into the whole winter sports thing.
In fact, I got to.
I was going to go. On the other hand, am inside in the heat.
I wanted to go skating tomorrow, but instead, I've got to. Did I say that? Jury duty.
Duty.
Oh, I did
sorry,
say that on the
Peter.
Air. Yeah.
Bad.
Here's Dave in Livonia. Dave, hi. You're on the air.
Hi. I was wondering if you heard anything about Tony Blair being up in front of like a congressional committee?
Not a congressional committee, but it was a parliamentary commission that was investigating whether Tony Blair lied to the British people and lied to Parliament about the Britain's involvement in the Iraq War, and whether he was just George W. Bush's puppet. Of course, he denied it. Tony Blair, one of the more despicable characters around, somehow, I mean, George Bush is just, I mean, sure, I mean, is evil, but acted evilly. But, you know, he's kind of a pathetic character. Was kind of a sock puppet for Cheney and the rest of these guys. Not that that takes any responsibility off him, but Tony Blair, I mean, this was a guy with real arrogance who does not back away from a minute of saying that Britain did the right thing by going into Iraq, and saying that, it's astounding that he would even say that Saddam Hussein, after 9/11, was a threat. I mean, this has been so debunked so many times, it's just jaw-dropping. And also, that since he's left, this is not too unusual, but since he's left Britain, being Britain's prime minister, he's become a multi-millionaire. I mean, that's...
No question.
Yeah, I mean, that's very frequent. Ex-presidents do as well. All right, Dave, thank you very much. That just happened this week. Let's get our final caller, Paul in Plymouth. Hi, Paul, you're on the air.
Hey, Peter, I just wanted to share something with you about the windmills.
Sure.
I'm a location scout manager for film and television productions and commercials. And last summer, we went up to Pigeon, Michigan, right at the very tip of the thumb.
Okay.
And had this really neat commercial that S.C. Johnson was shooting. S.C. Johnson has built 40 windmill towers up there, right in the top of the thumb. And they've rented the land from the farmers. They give them free electricity from the production of the wind.
Mm-hmm.
And they actually sell the energy back to Detroit Edison.
Sure, if you you can do that.
If you have solar power on your house, you can do that.
Yeah, if you have an excess, they have to buy it back.
And you know what, the whole premise of their commercial they were shooting was really neat, that they're putting up these windmill towers. They're going to put up another 40, I guess, up there, I think in Ubley as well as Pigeon. And they are using, they're like creating power so that they can say their factories are producing wind generated power.
So. Oh, so they can cover everything else up.
No, right.
Hey, but have you been around them? Have you been around these wind towers?
Yes.
Are they noisy?
No, not
at all. That's the big complaint from people who live near them, that the noise will affect their lives.
On the island of Nantucket, these people that, there's all these islands off the coast of Maine and Massachusetts and what have you, and there's this big debate of whether to install them, and there's people that said, okay, yeah, wind power, that's great. You know, we won't have to have generators on our island, and they put them on, and they say they can't believe how noisy they are. But you
no.
say... No?
You know what not those people from Nantucket big. Can do?
These are the big towers. They're not the little ones. I don't know if those little ones make noise, but these are the ones that are probably have 150-foot blades, and they're spread out over 4 or 5 square miles there. You can't hear them at all. And
I would
encourage you to go up there. They're fascinating, how they move on their own to catch as much wind as they possibly can to keep spinning. And it's kind of neat that they just rent a little small piece of land from the farmers,
mm-hmm.
and they give them electricity while they're there, so it kind of helps the farmer out. And they're sitting in the middle of these cornfields.
Well, we go up to like Grand Bend or north up to the, what the hell's the name of the peninsula? The Bruce Peninsula. You go by, right near an Indian, a native Canadian area, there's this whole, all these wind towers, and I gotta say, I mean, I've gone by there with the windows open, I've never heard anything. I mean, if it's that loud, but, you know, it's funny that you do get these complaints.
I'd love to send you a couple of pictures. I took a bunch of pictures over there. Where would I send them over there to?
Send them, we mean physically or email?
Yeah.
calltalkyes@yahoo.com.
Okay. I'll send you over there. It's really fascinating. I mean, it just, what a nice project. And I guess they say that they put them up there in the thumb because that is that little corridor between the bay there and the other side of Lake Huron has some of the most, the greatest winds that go across the thumb there.
Wow.
Most of the year. So it was really neat.
Better than nukes, better than coal, better than oil.
Yeah.
All right, Paul, I'll look for that. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Appreciate it. Thanks for being our last caller. Well, Jalene, thank you so much.
Peter, good luck at jury duty tomorrow. And Jade, thank you so much. Not to remind you, Jade, thank you so much for being a great screen caller. What is it?
Call screener.
Thank you. We need to go.
Yeah. And we'll have a podcast, and Jade is putting this together, available by noon tomorrow. And if you had subscribed, you can go to WRIF.com, go to the podcast, and you'll go to the Night Call page, and you'll have one delivered as soon as they're put up. And if you haven't gotten any in quite a while, what that means is that the subscription went haywire when we changed servers, right?
Things happen. Computers are supposed to make our lives easier. Sometimes, not so much.
All right, got a couple interviews next. Stay tuned, and we'll talk next week.
101 WRAF and Buff Whelan Chevrolet bring you the Strip Down Loud. Featuring Shinedown and Puddle of Mud. Keep in luck of overhead to win tickets for Shinedown and Puddle of Mud. Their second show, February 6th, the Fillmore. Tickets still available for this second show. You'll also score exclusive wrist passes to an intimate, invitation-only performance with Shinedown and Puddle of Mud, Friday, February 5th at the Hard Rock Cafe downtown before their sold-out first show. One lucky roof winner will score an awesome grand prize, a trip for two on board the VH1's best cruise ever from Tampa to Grand Cayman, featuring live performances from Shinedown, Three Doors Down, and more. Go to VH1BestCruiseEver.com for all the details. Shinedown, Puddle of Mud, the WRIF Strip Down Loud. From Buff Whelan Chevrolet, Shop the Giant, Buff Whelan Chevrolet, 17.5 in Van Dyke and Sterling Heights, and 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks. 101 The Riff.
This is your Car Care Minute. With more folks taking driving vacations this year, the pros at the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence offer the following tips to help you arrive at your destination safely. First, review your owner's manual and follow the recommended service schedules. Be certain to check the level and concentration of the cooling system. Check your tires for wear and pressure, and be sure your heating and air conditioning systems are operating efficiently. If you've been experiencing performance problems such as hard starts, rough idling, or stalling, now's the time to have your vehicle serviced by a certified automotive technician. It's extra insurance against an annoying breakdown while on vacation. Your Car Care Minute is a public service by this station and the National Institute for Automotive Service Excellence, ASE.com.
Is this on? Thank you. All right. Good morning, students. This is your principal speaking. Please listen closely to the following schedule changes. First period will be replaced by sleeping in. Second period will be replaced by warm weather. Third period will be replaced by belly flops. Fourth period will be replaced by goofing around. Fifth period will be replaced by batting leadoff. But there will be no changes to lunch. It will be in session every day.
School may be out for summer. but lunch is always in session. If your kids rely on subsidized school meals, call Gleaners Community Food Bank of Southeastern Michigan at 1-866-GLEANER or visit feedingamerica.org/summermeals.
A public service announcement brought to you by Feeding America and the Ad Council.
101 WRIF in WRIF HD1 Detroit.
Peter Werby here with you. Thank you very much for joining me. I don't think I'm alone when I say I have great concern for our environment. Almost everybody that is not completely crazy is concerned about the state of our environment. There are debates about different aspects of it, like global warming and climate change, but most of us do not want to suck in pollution. Most of us do not want to eat a bunch of chemicals in our food. Most of us want clean, pure water. It doesn't matter where you are in the political spectrum. Everyone agrees to that. But the concern is pretty generalized. It's like most things. We hope that we don't get poisoned. We hope that the people that are in charge of things make the right decisions. But as I've always said, an engaged citizenry is key to democracy and key to getting what we want. And the first thing you have to begin with is information and knowledge. You can't just you can say that kind of general statement, and then the guys in power will say, "Okay, sure, we don't worry, we'll take care of you." Well, I'm not there, and I don't think many of you are as well. And many people ask me, where do I get my information from? One important source for me about the environment is E! Magazine. It's E! The Environmental Magazine. And they're celebrating their 20th anniversary, and they have an incredible issue coming out. And it's the magazine is so attractive, so filled with important, powerful bits of information. Or I shouldn't even say bits. I mean, huge pieces of information that we need to know. And best of all, it often gives advice how we, the citizens, can move towards the kind of planet we want to live in. Joining me to talk about the 20th anniversary and their just published 20th anniversary issue is Britta Belli. She's the editor, and we reach her in her office in Connecticut. Welcome to the Peter Werby Show.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, now 20 years, that's something we hear about all these publications going under. The Environmental Magazine going strong?
Yeah, I mean, it is really remarkable, I think, particularly in this day and age. I mean, since we've been here, have seen green publications come and go in just the last few years. Plenty Magazine, for instance, comes to mind. But there's been several that have folded recently. One of the things that's allowed us to stay afloat has been the fact that we're a nonprofit magazine. We're nonprofit, we're independent, but we do grant writing, that in addition to advertising, as all magazines do. And so it's that combined effort that's helped us survive, really, all these years.
What drives you and the magazine? And well, I mean, that's probably two separate questions. You as an individual to want to edit a magazine like the Environmental Magazine, and the magazine itself. I mean, I guess one is mission statement, one is personal engagement.
Right. For me personally, this is an endless source of interesting information. There's so much out there. I mean, I think the more you research and cover environmental issues, the more you realize just how interconnected everything is, how everything we do really has an impact. So it's very much a learning process and a fascinating learning process at that. And I think for the magazine itself, the magazine's mission has always really been to promote the issues and the causes of the environmental community at large. There's so many of these wonderful groups and doing grassroots, movements across the world, whether it's stopping deforestation, talking about toxins in our food or our water and air, climate change. I mean, so many of these issues out there. And I think much of what we do is really try to capture these issues and bring them to a more general mainstream audience.
Well, you do an excellent job, and it's an extraordinarily attractive magazine as well. Without being, I mean, it's readable. I mean, some of these these modern magazines are going, is this an ad or is this a story? And it's all cockeyed on the page. But the Environmental Magazine is an extraordinary design, extraordinarily designed magazine as well. You know, this is an odd thing to say, but there really shouldn't have to be E! Magazine. I mean, the people in charge, both the politicians politicians and the people that lead the corporations that are often the major polluters, they live in the same planet with us. I mean, why sometimes it strikes me, why do we even have to have an environmental movement or an environmental consciousness? It should be kind of like an avatar, right? We're just all connected, except there's got to be a disconnect somewhere where people would allow what goes on to go on.
I mean, that's certainly true, and I think a lot of people really are living in the short term. I mean, what can I gain now, you know, in my lifetime? And I'm not really going to worry about the long-term effects. You know, when the primary value is really how much can I make, you know, everything else falls away, which is, you know, we just see a lowering of quality standards. And I mean, even just the kind of where we've hit in terms of the culture, in terms of our consumerism and all the cheap stuff we buy, all the cheap furniture and kind of inexpensive products that are shipped from China. I mean, you know, the demand has become that we want everything as cheaply as possible, and that has great environmental consequences. So that, you know, it really has to do with what are the sort of the values of an organization or of a company, and what regulations are out there protecting consumers from these long-term ills that we're beginning to feel the effects of.
You listen to Peter Werby's show. My guest is Britta Belli. She's the editor of E, the environmental magazine, and their website is emagazine.com. I'll have a link on my website, peterwerby.com, as well. You've been editor for how long now?
3 years.
3 years. So 17 years went on before your stewardship. Were you aware of the magazine? Did this turn out to be like kind of a dream job?
You know, I mean, I certainly was aware of it because for me, it's based locally to where I live and work, or was working. I was working in alternative paper locally before this in Connecticut. So, I mean, I was aware of it. At the same time, it's a nationwide magazine. And I think our effects have been felt in many ways through our syndicated column, which is called Earth Talk. It's a question and answer column, very kind of straightforward, anything you want to know about environmental issues. And that's published. It's a free column, so if, you know, a media outlet wants to run it, they can. And it's published in over 1,800 outlets right now. So that's, I think in many ways, E's impact has been felt through things like that, through its column. We have a couple books out there, a green living book in particular, where we kind of cover all the basics for greening your life, you know, your home, your children's rooms, your kitchen, that sort of thing. So...
Yeah, well, that we were talking about bottom line rather than looking at the long-term consequences. E! Magazine has numerous ads, full-page ads, in fact, for where proof that you can combine commodities with Earth-safe products, like on one of the most toxic products, I don't know, there's so many, is house paints. And yet on the back, there's a big full-page ad for natural oil-based paint and fashions and lots of other things. So you can, you certainly can have both. But let's talk a little about the history of E! Magazine. Well, you know, I thought that was really interesting and well done throughout the pages of the current January-February edition, which is 20 years, the celebration of 20 years of the magazine. There's a column for, let me tell you, it must be each of them, huh? Or no, couldn't be.
We just picked, you know, it just happened to be 20, actually, but we just chose some of the leading topics that the magazine's covered over the years. And I think in a way to show, I really think in many ways that this magazine was ahead of its time in many ways, covering some of these topics that you see widely discussed today, such as climate change and overconsumption and issues with meat and climate change that, I mean, are becoming more widely recognized now, but really, you know, 10 years ago, we're not part of the common discussion. So,
when you look back through these pages of the 20th anniversary issue and you see some of the issues that were there before you became editor, which ones really draw your attention?
I mean, in some ways, there's certain, I think, topics that are sort of controversial that E has become known for covering. One of those is the issue of population. It's one of those sort of, you know, many environmental groups are kind of uncomfortable discussing the issue of population, which is primarily that no matter what we do to improve our renewable energy picture, simply the number of people is going to offset any benefits that we gain by our, you know, all of our greening initiatives. So it's a very kind of uncomfortable topic, but it's one that E has covered. I mean, we've had maybe six, I think, cover stories devoted to it over the years. So, I mean, one that we've certainly taken seriously. Another one that I think is somewhat controversial that E's covered quite a bit is the issue of meat and climate change, which is to say that the meat industry contributes more in terms of global warming gases than transportation does. I mean, it's something that, you know, it's really under-recognized.
Tell us a little about that. I mean, that certainly surprised me. I'm sure listeners as well. How does it do that?
Well, one of the most important reasons is that methane, which is what, you know, pretty much comes from the back end of cows, is a much more potent global warming gas than carbon dioxide is. It's the question of that. It's the question of the amount of petroleum that it takes to run these industries, the amount of pollution that they generate. It's all the combination is really. There's just serious environmental consequences for the large-scale factory farming that we do today.
Mm-hmm. You mentioned population. It's a touchy subject because frequently people see it's people of color that have too many. I mean, that's the implication. So there's always these. Am I right? Is that where it becomes kind of controversial?
Well, certainly that's part of it. I mean, whenever you're trying to say, hey, maybe we shouldn't be having so many kids, I mean, I think it's just a very touchy issue in general. Certainly the number of children that you have is closely tied to education. So the other side of that coin is that, you know, there needs to be better family planning opportunities for people abroad. There needs to be greater education and living standards for people, because certainly the more educated people are and the more aware they are of other options, the more that you can reduce sort of that unwanted population growth.
Mm-hmm.
But at the same time, it has to be said that we who maybe we're not having this population explosion in the U.S. at the same time have a real consumption problem. So there's that end of it too. I mean, who's consuming the most? You know, and it's certainly Americans are sort of leading the world in terms of consumption.
Bitabella is my guest. She's the editor of E, the environmental magazine, and we're talking about 20 years of environmental coverage. The anniversary issue is out now. It is the January-February issue. And so it comes out six times a year.
Right. Yep.
Yeah. Yeah. Hey, how did I do? The math. I did great. Yeah, I was looking, and I remember this issue. The one, it's called the Junk Mail Hall of Fame. And I didn't remember any of the statistics, but back then, E! Magazine reported that there were 62 billion pieces of bulk mail sent out each year, and now there's 90 billion. So there's 50% more pieces. And if you think about this, I mean, people, I'm sure you have, but I'm thinking of people listening. How much junk mail did you throw away today? I just threw away a big handful, even though I tried to go to these websites and you ask for it to be stopped. I mean, the process that this all went through of trees being cut down, I mean, maybe clear cut, then, you know, processed and made into paper, which is this terrible industry, and then, you know, printed and shipped and all that, and then you look at it for like an eighth of a second and throw it in a wastebasket. I mean, so when you look... I'm sorry. Did you have a comment?
Surprised me was in updating that statistic, because, you know, we were looking at, okay, we had written about this issue in the past, let's see where we're at today. I honestly would have expected that the junk mail would have gone down, you know, in recent years as people are emailing more, you know, so much stuff is moving online. I mean, of course, we get a lot of spam email, but which surprisingly has environmental costs too, but it's amazing that with computers, it's still people are printing out so much. They're printing out their emails. We don't seem to be doing anything in terms of saving more paper.
Yeah, well, I remember oh, probably mid-90s, a little later, a friend of mine, when I didn't even like the idea of computers, not sure that I yet still do, even though I seem to be immersed in them as much as anyone else, and this friend of mine said, Pete, you're going to love this. Where are we? This will end printing. There will you will not have to print another thing. Well, I begin to tell you, we could use here with where I work maybe a million sheets a year. I mean, it is absolute, and the whole area around here is just awash in wasted paper. I try to use both sides, but even still, you know, it's just
right.
It's just amazing. But so, all right, so this has gotten worse. Are there areas that we've actually gained in? I mean, usually when you read environmental stuff, you just want to go cut your wrist to be ahead of the curve, you know, so we don't all die like something in Omega Man or something, you know?
Well, I mean, certainly we've become better in terms of awareness. I mean, and we've seen just so many more people that are kind of comfortable with these ideas who are now questioning. They're looking at the labels of the things they buy. There's certainly been consumer pressure to increase the amount of organic. So now you see even Walmart is selling organic T-shirts and organic produce. So the idea of organics has certainly become much more mainstream, and that's brought down the costs, which has been great. In terms of getting chemicals from our plastics, from things like baby bottles, all of that, bisphenol A, you've maybe heard some discussions about that, or BPA, certain major retailers now are banning any products that contain this, issues with Teflon, all these things that particularly affect people's health. I think that those are the things that really grab people. That's sort of their immediate concerns, you know, and there has been more consumer demand for greater regulation and control over these products. I mean, we've seen lead in children's toys from China and arsenic. I mean, like, you know, so these are serious concerns that I think people are becoming much more savvy. Like, wait, we really need to know what's in the things we buy. That, and I would say also cars. I mean, we've, I think, very recently begun to see a real turnaround in the types of vehicles that people are looking for. They're looking for energy-efficient vehicles, greater mileage, greater gas efficiency. Hybrids are taking off. We're seeing now major car companies that are really exploring electric vehicles. So, you know, it's been a long time in coming, but I think we've finally taken a step beyond the giant SUVs, and let me get as big a vehicle as I can possibly get.
You're talking here in Detroit, you know.
Right. That's a major turnaround now that we're seeing, I think, is that there's been a real, it seems that mostly recently, I mean, that's been where all the car companies are headed, is really in a greener direction. So that's been really promising.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's look at your January-February 2010 edition of E! The Environmental Magazine. Britta Belli is my guest. She's the editor. And what an absolutely striking cover. This young boy, maybe, 6 years old or so, staring into the camera with bright blue eyes and a nice half smile. But it says, solving the autism puzzle. Yeah, and I looked to see if I didn't read it all. But does this young boy have autism that's on the cover?
Well, you know what? The cover photo is actually, I mean, that's a stock image.
Okay.
So I'm not sure that we know the particulars about that actual boy, as you said, that he was a compelling-looking face. The boy on the inside, though, it's sort of a kind of a striking black-and-white image on the inside of a young boy named Gavin Schultz, was sent to us by his mother, actually, who was interviewed in the story, and does have autism. And there's actually photos of him in the issue that show his progression. So it's almost as though as you're looking at his face from, you know, say 18 months to 2 years, or I'm sorry, 5 or 6 years old, that you're seeing how you can almost see the disorder, sort of how it's affecting him just by looking at his face, which is kind of interesting.
Sure. But someone might say, well, wait a minute, autism, we've been hearing a lot more about that recently, but why in the world would an article about autism be on the cover of the Environmental magazine?
Well, I mean, there's so much, such a large kind of search for answers in relationship to autism, and it's only recently that the research has begun to turn its focus to environmental toxins and how they might be playing a role in this increasing disorder. I mean, it's just the numbers just keep going up and up. They've gone up tenfold since the 1980s, and now it's as many as like 1 in 100 children and 1 in 58 boys who are being diagnosed with autism. So something is certainly going on that researchers are saying has to be beyond just genetics. There must be something else going on, perhaps in our environment. And so they're beginning to study environmental toxins and mercury in particular.
Well, you know, there's, I forgot, in Latin, there's a logical fallacy, which means just because something happened after something else does, doesn't mean there's a cause. And that's the skeptic's argument against climate change or global warming as well. Yeah, there may be global warming, there may be autism, but the environmentalists are exaggerating the links, that there's not good hard evidence. When you hear skeptics like that, and the work that you and E! Magazine have been doing for so long, what's your reaction to it?
I mean, I think as with so many things, there are no simple answers. And I think oftentimes people want to just be able to point to one thing and say, well, this is it, and this has been solved. I know with autism in particular that the closest anyone knows is that there's probably a genetic predisposition to this disorder, and then that predisposition is being acted upon by various factors. And there's never going to be one chemical, one thing that we can pinpoint, but we do know that the number of toxins in our environment and in our bodies has increased tremendously over the years. So they do studies now. There was one that just recently came out regarding like flame retardants in our bloodstreams, and they know that if you had a child, a toddler, the amount of flame retardants in their bloodstream would be 3 times higher than in yours.
Wow.
The cumulative exposure that we've developed now of so many of these chemicals that have really become quite widespread is really a major public health concern. And I mean, the rising number of UC allergies, asthma cases in children, and certainly autism are all at least pointing to that direction. But of course, there is no answer at this point. It's all still being researched and studied.
Well, I always say that on all these issues, you're better to err on the side of caution. I mean, if you take all the toxins out of the environment, you would and go, oh, it didn't solve the autism problem. At least you would have a much cleaner environment. And I tend to fall along the lines that you do. That probably predispositions are triggered by such a toxic environment. And what about the skepticism about global warming and climate change? It seems those folks, and for one, it's been politicized. So it's almost the right wing, the conservatives that are the big deniers and skeptics. I mean, these scientists were trying to get a picture of this and see what's actually happening here, but then it's turned out to be this politicized issue that should just be about our environment.
Right. I mean, and I think what seems to me oftentimes becomes the point of confusion has to do with the difference between climate and weather. So if you say, well, the Earth is heating up and the oceans are heating up, and you know this has been measured and you know this is a factual thing, people will argue, well, we just had a terrible winter and it's been snowing like crazy. So how could it be global warming? But I think what's interesting is that it's the extreme temperatures that we're seeing, it's the extreme storms and weather events that we're seeing around the world, and I don't think there's anybody alive who could deny that we've been seeing some fairly extreme weather events in recent years, and they keep becoming more prevalent. You know, we're seeing glaciers melting. I mean, there's very measurable effects of global warming. So, but to me, that's always been the big point of confusion for people, has been just that issue of weather, that if it's a very cold winter or a very snowy winter, that somehow that negates global warming when in fact that really is unrelated.
Oh yeah, there's a right-wing news site that I look at all the time, and it has cold weather up all the time. Like, this is proof that there's not global warming. But I guess I don't want this to be the final question, but any sense of why this has been politicized? I mean, why, like I say, why isn't this a politically neutral issue that everyone would want to solve the problem, again, on the side of caution?
know, I honestly, I think it comes down to really a financial topic once again, which is an issue of regulation. The idea of regulating industries, regulating particularly the fossil fuel industries, which have had a kind of a stronghold in this country for many years, is something that scares a lot of people, and they believe it's going to hurt American business. So it's really, I think, in the interest of protecting American business and established fossil fuel interests in this country. And as soon as you say, okay, yes, this does exist, the global warming does exist, and it's being caused by these emissions, so we have to regulate these emissions, well, somebody does pay the financial cost for that.
Mm-hmm. Well, I want to thank you so much for being on the broadcast. Congratulations to E! The Environmental Magazine for its 20th anniversary, 20 years of environmental coverage. The January-February issue is the 20th anniversary edition. Besides the autism article, there's all sorts of interesting things, talking about organic food from China, the year's best green gadgets, eco style. Yes, you can be fashionable and environmental as well. And Britta Belli is the editor. Congratulations on a great job, and we look forward to another 20 years.
Thanks for having me.
This is Night Call on 101 WRIF. Peter will be right back with another guest right after this.
101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Our son would go from "Good morning, Mom" to words you'd never expect to come out of your child's mouth. Our pain came from not knowing what to do. He was diagnosed with paranoid schizophrenia. 5 or 6 years later, he was diagnosed with obsessive compulsive disorder. I think the hardest part of living with someone who has a mental illness is thinking that you're alone, that no one else could understand. NAMI, the National Alliance on Mental Illness, is made up of people who live it every day. We lean on each other and we learn from each other. NAMI doesn't let anyone give up hope. My name is Mary Tadigan, and I can tell you what NAMI has meant for my family. It has meant that we are a family.
1 in 5 adults lives with depression, schizophrenia, anxiety, or other mental illnesses. NAMI provides education and support to these families and individuals. To find a local chapter, go to NAMI.org or call 800-950-NAMI.
Detroit's Rock Station, 101, The Riff.
I'd like a nice skim, no whiff latte.
Hey, you're the Red Defender, right?
Yes.
I saw you in the paper. You saved a runaway train.
That's right.
So shouldn't you be out saving something?
I already stopped a bank heist this morning.
Evil doesn't take a break.
Can I sit down for a second?
Hey, dial back the caffeine, man.
Saving the world isn't easy. Saving a life is. One pint of blood can save up to 3 lives. Go to bloodsaves.com. A public service message brought to you by the Ad Council.
Mom?
Dad?
How long should I wait for you?
Mom?
If I'm at soccer practice,
what if something happens?
Will you come get me?
There's no reason not to have a plan in case of an emergency.
Mom, if you're not home, should we go to the neighbor's house?
And some extremely good reasons why you should.
Can you tell me?
Everybody should have a plan. Take 5 minutes to talk about where you'll meet and how you'll get in touch with each other in an emergency. For other things you can do to be prepared, visit www.ready.gov. A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Homeland Security and the Ad Council.
Now, Night Call is back on 101 WRIF Detroit. Here's your host, Peter Werby.
Thank you very much. Peter Werby here with you. Boy, what things are sure going crazy in this country and in this world, and trying to make sense of it isn't real easy. I know a lot of you are confused, and I can't blame you, because I'm pretty confused as well. And that's why I think it's important to get a grasp on other people's thoughts, because a lot of folks have spent the time to try to analyze history, contemporary events, make some predictions for the future, and often and frequently what we can do to intervene in history, so we're not just passive spectators or passive consumers of it, which most of us have been relegated to. A book that was easy to come my way because it was done by a good friend of mine, Francis Shore, is called Dying Empire, U.S. Imperialism and Global Resistance. And you may remember Fran Shore from past appearances on this program. He's a professor of history at Wayne State University, and very unusual, we have him in the studio here, and it's a pleasure to welcome him, Francis Shore. author of Dying Empire, U.S. Imperialism, Global Resistance. Hi, Fran.
Hi, Pete.
And I guess from just the way we address each other, it's probably, you know, we always talk about full disclosure. We're also, as I said, very good friends and have traveled several places together, maybe one of which we'll talk about. Your book, congratulations. People think, wow, Dying Empire? What's he talking about, the Soviet Union? Or you're talking about the United States. I mean, are we dying? We're in bad times right now, but hey, aren't we going to pull out?
Well, it's inevitable that empires die, not just this one, but everyone. So what we look at when we, as historians, when we try to understand the past and we try to understand where empires are going, is to discern what is particular about those empires and why they're beginning to die. And it's very clear that, you know, over the last 30 or so years, this has been an effort on the part of the political class in Washington and the ruling elite to try to stave off what is invariably a decline of U.S. global influence.
But usually it's they have an empire. The Soviets had an empire. The Romans had an empire. We're a benevolent nation that that goes abroad to help people like in Haiti and what have you. Well, so, I mean, that what I'm getting at is empire, even if we're on the downslide, an empire sounds like a pejorative. It's a very negative word. So maybe lay out what an empire is and why you think the U.S. Fits that definition.
Yeah, an empire is fundamentally about a matrix of control by a dominant power of other entities in the world. And in this sense, you have to talk about it in terms of geopolitical, military, economic, and cultural. And the U.S. has been, ever since World War II, it was the dominant power in the world. I mean, after World War II, the United States controlled two-thirds of the gold reserves in the world. It manufactured over 50% of all the manufactured goods. It was number one in electronics, number one in steel, number one in terms of producing oil. And it came out of that war less scathed than any other nation, industrial nation in the world. So the U.S. had an enormous amount of power that it could throw on the world, and it set up an institutional network in terms of shoring up its economic global dominance, things like the International Monetary Fund, the World Bank, and it also set up a number of political institutions, helping set up the United Nations and the Security Council through which it could work its will. But more significantly, beyond these overt mechanisms of establishing empire, of establishing control, the U.S. also had covert instruments, namely the Central Intelligence Agency. And when the Central Intelligence Agency found that there were political states that were not at all friendly to the United States, they went in, as in 1953, in Iran, 1954, in Guatemala, and helped to overthrow these countries. That's what empire,
yeah.
That's what empire does. That's what empire has done historically, to expand.
Yeah, that's what they do, to expand influence. And
exactly.
What you use, the word which isn't used too much, hegemony.
Right.
Which means dominance.
Right.
But, you know, saying, as I said, empire has, the word itself is a pejorative, is a negative. And I think some Americans react negatively because they think, well, we got some problems, but you're talking bad about the home team.
Well, the point is that what's happened ever since the mid-70s is that there's been a massive decline in the fortunes of the United States, and it's been taken out of the hide of working people in this country as well as people around the world. So, you know, we're pretty familiar with the fact that the building of the middle class through this period of the 50s and 60s was really about the fact that the empire was also expanding. But as it began to contract, as there was a crisis, not only in the economic system, but in the aftermath of the defeat in Vietnam, as there was a crisis, the real emphasis of where and how this empire would try to repair itself came out on the backs of working people in this country, the wages going down, unions being broken, etc., and then by efforts on the part of the ruling elite in Washington to continue to foment and intervene wherever it could, to foment conflict, intervene wherever it could, and in fact have, in a sense, wars, demonstrable wars, to prove that the United States was a still power in the world as it was beginning to lose economic influence and political influence in the world.
Well, it's not happening anymore. This is a small joke, though, of course. I mean, we're involved in two wars now, as the conservative libertarian Ron Paul has indicated. We have 700 to 900 bases around the world. The fundamentals of our economy is the military-industrial complex. The book is Dying Empire, U.S. Imperialism and Global Resistance. My guest on the Peter Werbe Show, Francis Shore from Wayne State University. Global resistance, and we're just sort of scratching the surface of this, but I wanted to get to the subtitle. Well, let's back up in the subtitle. U.S. imperialism, that again used to be in G.I. Joe comics, the the red rat would say, "Die, imperialist dog," and yet I know with your work, both as an academic historian and as an activist, you put a great emphasis on precision. So when you say U.S. imperialism, it's not an epithet, but rather...
It's a descriptive term.
Yeah, which...
To better understand the nature of power and how power is developed, through a series of dimensions. As I said, the military dimension, economic dimension, political, cultural dimensions. And there have been imperial projects, not just by the United States, but certainly by other countries over hundreds of years. It's just that these imperial projects that the United States has engaged in the aftermath of Vietnam, have further eroded the standing of the United States in the world, and at the same time, all of this treasure, both in terms of money and material and human beings, was being wasted by the trillions and trillions of dollars. The United States was losing any kind of preeminence in the world as far as its economic preeminence. So to go back to what I was suggesting, the United States is no longer number one in steel, no longer number one in production of electronics. More significantly, most people haven't come to grips with the fact that when you look at fundamental indices about our quality of life, the amount of hours people work, the amount of health care people have, the infant mortality rates, particularly in the urban centers, all of these put the United States way down in like 26th, 25th among industrial countries. So we're talking about a declining power, a power that squandered its resources on projecting its military control outward, but has refused to take care of business back at home. And we know here in Detroit we're particularly suffering. You look in the inner city, and we have unemployment rates that are beyond what the Depression had for young African Americans in particular. And it's not just young African Americans. It's working class kids in general. I think they're feeling the brunt of this. And unless we begin to deal with what has been the legacy of imperialism and what has been the continuing squandering of resources, we're going to be, at best, another kind of England where people walk around with, don't mean to offend anybody, but, with bad teeth and...
The stereotype.
Not a good diet.
That's interesting, Franchore, that you said that, because I was just going to point to England. England has been a dying empire for a century, and yet they maintain themselves, and it's not like they've become a third world country. They certainly...
Not at all.
But also, the other empires, if you think about Spain, Portugal, are we missing...
France.
And
Soviet.
I mean, France existed for a long period in the late or in the early 19th century on looting Haiti, essentially.
And so what you see with these empires is all of them go through this declining period where they have a kind of imperial overreach, where they try to take on more than they're equipped to do, where they squander lots of their treasure because they believe that any intention anywhere in their empire to destabilize it somehow requires a massive response. In addition, they begin to turn to financial speculation, which is precisely what we've seen in the kind of casino capitalism that's come, you know, crashing down over the last year or two. So we are in a kind of classic phase of a decline of an empire. It's just that we need to come to grips with what that means, and we need to redirect our resources in ways that are going to finally deal with all the things that have been put off because the political elite didn't want to contend with the larger issues of how we create equality and justice here at home.
Now, you know, there's a sort of mass psychology of being number one. I've been saying this almost in every interview that I do, but my partner in thought crime, Jalene Jordan, who I do a talk show with, when we get these statistics, some, Franchor, which you mentioned about we're not number one, but we're number 26, and we go, USA, USA, number 26, number 26. So, and I, when people say that, if they phone in and they say, well, gee, you know, we're still the best country in the world, I'd say, well, what's the second best? You know, what I mean, it's sort of a weird rank ordering, but there is many people who have this sort of psychoanalytic connection to the idea of projected power and dominance in the world.
Yeah, it's a kind of compensatory response, because as people have less power over their own lives, the sense is that through some substitute, namely this nation state that has tried to project its own power internationally, that people can identify that way with some kind of winner. But in fact, one of the things we've seen is the U.S., even in its projection of power, has been losing so many engagements, going back to Vietnam, which is another problem with how we reconcile ourselves to the fact that the very security and freedom that's often promised by those in power has eroded and hasn't translated into the reality for everybody in this country.
Francis Shore's book is Dying Empire, U.S. Imperialism and Global Resistance, and he has a website, dyingempire.org. Yeah. And I should have asked you this beforehand. Is there excerpts from the book?
Yeah, you can find excerpts on the book, and I also embedded some music videos from YouTube so folks could see the relevance of some of the things that you know, other people have done in terms of visuals that relate specifically to the themes in the book.
So, well, and I think this could bring us into another aspect of the subtitle, because this is all grim conversation, but reality-based. And if we're still thinking everything's okay and all we got to do is win a war or something like that, or get some other politician in, I think we're in for a real, an even sadder time ahead. I would hate to think these are the good old days, but there's a potential. And that is global resistance. And, you know, there's that old phrase about think globally, act locally. Mm-hmm. So what do you chronicle in your book, Dying Empire, about resistance to this? And well, I'll ask another part of this.
Yeah,
go ahead.
Well, I mean, there are a variety of resistances. There's certainly people who wish to be their own self-determined agents in the world, and whether those translate to nation states, and we think about, you know, Central America and the intervention of the Reagan administration in Nicaragua during the 1980s and violating international law by mining their harbors, but that the Sandinistas and the international solidarity groups and people here in the United States, Witness for Peace and lots of different groups, participated in trying to prevent the Reagan administration from destroying this effort to provide an alternative path to development. So, you know, go back to the 1980s, think about the anti-nuke demonstrations that weren't just in this country. And remember, a million people gathered in New York City in 1982 as part of that anti-nuke demonstration. But there were people throughout Europe indicating that they were tired of this Cold War, of this bipolar East versus West, of threatening one part of the globe with another part of the globe with nuclear weapons. So all of that was another aspect of that resistance. More recently, when Bush was threatening to invade Iraq, and before he went in 2003, in February, I'm sorry, of 2002, in February, there were massive numbers of people who gathered 15 million or so, the estimation, the largest international demonstration ever seen. So there are all these glimmerings that there is, a cry, a hue and cry out there for a different and a newer world and a better world. And that's also manifested itself in lots of movements around the globe, plus an international effort known as the World Social Forum, which has its own national variation called the United States Social Forum that will be meeting here in Detroit in June. Of 2010. So we've got lots of people who are interested in peace, justice, equality, or organizing locally, nationally, internationally, and that's really what I try to chronicle and try to highlight as far as the global resistance. There is another world being built. It is an alternative to what the way in which power has been used, the way in which imperial power has been used, and there are many, many hopeful signs, not only in around the world, but also in this country, with people doing as small sorts of things as urban farming, as getting off this agribusiness grid, beginning to try to find ways of living an alternative, sustainable life. And all of these are the new kind of world which is being built, in a sense, in the hulk of a dying hulk of an empire.
Yeah, and I don't know if I did I say at the beginning of this that you and I attended the World Social Forum in Caracas, Venezuela in 2006,
yes.
I think it was. And in your book, Dying Empire, you mentioned some of the more formal resistance to American hegemony, like the Venezuelan government, but Hugo Chavez, like so many other state formations, are also heavily flawed themselves.
Yes.
So if the resistance takes the form of just sort of, in a sense, another racket, that doesn't provide the alternative. I mean, that really means, I mean, I think we're at the cusp of history where we either have to have real alternatives, not like, oh, the Democrats aren't doing good, let's get the Republicans in. Oh, well, the Republicans aren't doing it, let's get the Democrats in. That is just like South America, where, you know, these conservative parties rule for a while, then the liberal parties. Then and, I mean, I think what you're talking about in Dying Empire is a, just what that phrase means. Another world is possible. And the sub-slogan for that, that it's necessary.
In other words, it's necessary. Now, the U.S. is necessary.
Yeah.
And precisely that point, what's interesting is when you highlighted or referred to what had gone on previously in Latin America with the difference between, you know, the two established parties, usually some conservative party and some liberal party. One of the things that's in fact happened in places like Venezuela, but more specifically also in Bolivia and Ecuador, is they've thrown out those old constitutions, which effectively entrenched the powers that be. And they've opened up to creating the possibility for more and more democracy, greater grassroots democracy. Obviously still flawed in terms of how these national populist politicians, operate in those countries, whether Chavez in Venezuela or elsewhere. The point is that just as we have now seen recently, the Supreme Court has essentially stamped the corporate control over this country with its recent decision about the unlimited spending of money, we need a new kind of political order here. We need something that gets us beyond this binary of the Democrats and Republicans, something that gets us beyond the sense that we are passive consumers or spectators to what goes on in Washington, and we need to, as those in Latin America did, in massive movements like protesting water and trying to put price on water in Bolivia. It was out of those massive number of social movements that Evo Morales, the first indigenous president of any country in the Americas, came to power. So it's really those grassroots movements that people have engaged in and that they're still engaging in that offers hopes for the future.
Well, I know as your friend, and maybe I hope this is not unfair, but that you are really of two minds, that on one hand you can chronicle this resistance, this desire to live differently, the understanding that this is not a tenable way to order the world, and have hope, exuberance, and support and direct involvement in these movements of resistance. And then you have at your worst moment, it's all over. I mean, you know, start lowering the curtain, you know.
Well, that's one of the things I say in my conclusion. I'm sort of, taking a riff from REM, and the title of the conclusion, it's The End of the World as We Know It. But I don't feel fine about it. The end of the world that I think is, that we've got to come to grips with is the end of empire. Any kind of empire, and that's the kind of world that I want to see end. But when we talk about the deep-rootedness of the environmental crisis, I mean, when we realize that what we're really talking about is a civilizational crisis about how we as human beings live on this earth, then we begin to see that, you know, do we have the time, do we have the will, do we have the capacity as a species to really rise above what has been the ravaging of the planet.
Well, so many people, of course, over the term so far of the Barack Obama administration have been so disappointed that he, in fact, has ruled in the manner of almost all presidents before him. Some aspects better, a lot exactly the same. But what I think people fail to realize, and I'm pretty sure you'd agree with this, is that we the citizenry, are functioning exactly the same, passively. Hoping to use that word that I think is sounds so good, but really means you're just letting events unravel without you directly involved. So we have to change too.
We do, and the problem that some other social psychologists have suggested is even deeper rooted, is that the citizenry of this country have been in such an abusive relationship over a long period of time that they act like abused spouses. They keep on hoping that their spouse will get better, realizing that this violence goes on, that this destruction of one's personhood continues unabated. And one of the things that I try to point out is that, you know, we can't just highlight one particular presidency. This is an imperial presidency that both Democrats and Republicans have shared in. There are nuances certainly between the two parties, but the fact is that even this president continues to promote the idea that the U.S. is an indispensable nation. It has to be a reluctant sheriff to go into certain regions. And that kind of thinking is dead-end thinking that's just helping to erode the empire. So our only hope doesn't lie in the hope dopesters, you know, who come onto the political scene every time there's a circus event every 4 years. But it really requires us to think about our lives in the longer term and from day to day.
You know, this was actually, this would have been a perfect end, but I have about 60 seconds left, and this, I don't know if this is answerable. What do you say to someone listening who says, well, you know what, I have a safe and secure job, my house is not going to be foreclosed on, and it's not, what do you mean, above water,
below water.
Below water, is that it?
That's it.
Anyway, that I got good kids, they go to a good school, everything's all right in my life. Why? I mean, you want to throw the baby out with the bathwater.
No, I'm going to rescue the baby, and I don't want to see it battered anymore, and I don't want to see it drowned in the tub. And I think the primary thing is people, if you walk outside, if you walk anywhere, you begin to see the collapse of this whole society. And no matter how many gated communities you may try to hide behind, it's all crumbling.
Ooh, we should have ended on the other one, but that's what this book is about, just showing the raw truth and a challenge to all of us to define our future. Either we have to define ourselves or we will be defined. Dying Empire is the book. It's published by Routledge. U.S. Imperialism and Global Resistance is the subtitle. You can go to dyingempire.org. There'll also be a link on my site. Peter Werbe, werbe.com. Francis Shore, thanks for being on my program.
Thanks so much, Pete.
Thank you for listening to Night Call on 101 WRIF. The views expressed on the program are not necessarily those of the staff, management, or ownership of WRIF Radio. Now, stay tuned for more Riff Rock on 101 WRIF Detroit. 101 WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Hey, this is Lars from Metallica.
Hello, this is Flea from Red Hot Chili Peppers.
Hello, this is Brian Johnson of AC/DC. You're listening to Detroit's home of rock and roll, WRIF.
Everything that rocks.
Detroit's rock station, 101 WRIF.
The Riff.
Over there? Over there's the water. Whoosh, whoosh. And look at all this stuff I'm standing on. It's called sand, and it's everywhere.
This woman may sound silly to you and me.
It's made up of little tiny pieces of rocks. Teeny little pieces of rocks.
But to her 2-year-old son exploring the world around him, she makes perfect sense.
How does it feel when you touch the sand? Is it warm?
Uh-huh.
It's hard to hold in your hand, isn't it?
Mm-hmm.
Learning starts long before school does, and children are naturally curious. They want to learn, so follow their lead. Take simple, everyday moments, like sorting laundry or playing on the beach, and turn them into learning moments.
Is this water?
No.
Very good. This is sand. Oh, no, it's not food. It's sand. We don't eat sand.
Turn everyday moments into learning moments. Find out how at pornlearning.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Play ball! Now pitching, Dave Black.
Dave is about to catch his opponent off guard. Not with his nasty fastball. No, instead of a fastball, Dave will be hurling a tomato.
And the pitch.
Ooh. Using tomatoes as baseballs won't go over well with anyone. But if you're looking to hit the ball further and throw better, eating a healthy diet that includes fruits and vegetables is a home run. Packed with nutrients, they could help keep your body healthy and strong, giving you the energy you need to hit that grand slam. When you look at it this way, eating tomatoes is playing hardball against the competition. Run, throw, think, eat better. Can your food do that? Find out at smallstep.gov.
That's smallstep.gov.
A public service announcement brought to you by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services and the Ad Council.
When I do it, I feel the blood rushing through me. My muscles tighten, and I keep going back for more.
Carmen Castillo is under the influence of Dana, her volunteer trainer.
Come on, Carmen, again.
By spending one day a week in the gym,
tuck your chin, Carmen.
Dana helps neighborhood kids like Carmen develop interests that keep them away from drugs.
Okay, let me see your shoulder shift. Jab, jab, great.
Be a coach, a mentor, a volunteer. No matter what it is, you have something to offer.
Cool workout, Carmen. See you next week.
Log on to helpyourcommunity.org or call 877-KIDS-313 and be an influence on the kids in your community. Brought to you by the Office of National Drug Control Policy and the Ad Council.
Ladies and gentlemen,
all right, listen up.
The Rock, 101 WRIF. Everything that rocks.